Okay, if you'll rise and join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, I see we have one individual for public comment. Michael?
How are you?
Good, you?
It's been 6 weeks since I met with you people and I haven't heard anything. I've been busy at the airport doing a bridge. I got home last night. Nothing's changed. And I thought I would come over and see how you're making out. I've done a little bit of homework and have some paperwork for you and was hoping that you had some answers for me.
Okay, as far as this is going, we received shortly after you came in, we received a
petition.
Huh?
A petition.
Yeah, a petition. Signed, how many people signed up?
25.
That from people from Bean Road that said that they didn't see a problem or didn't have a problem with the traffic that was on Bean Road.
Morris. Morris.
I'm sorry. Morrison Road. Yeah, go ahead, chuckle. on Morrison Road, and that we really didn't need to take any action. So I guess it was some of your neighbors and other people that lived either on Morrison Road or used Morrison Road all the time.
Probably the ones that speed. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm not going to do this. I've been at the airport since the 24th of August. Moved all my equipment home last night. There had 20 cars go by last night between 3 and 5 at 50 and 60 miles an hour. It just doesn't go away. But I'm home on the weekend. The cop drives by, but he doesn't pull over and pull radar for 10 minutes or 15 minutes. He goes on the road, and a car goes down behind him 2 minutes later doing 60 miles an hour. Drive-by's not going to work. Somebody pulling some radar might work.
And Chief Hankert has been doing that.
Yeah,
and
I haven't seen anybody sitting there with radar. We can fight all night.
Right. But the point
is, enough for this town. I asked you guys for a little help, and I'm getting nowhere. Here's a couple of things for you. There's a bridge in Laconia that went today, 16 feet wide, $1.8 million. I've done 7 of them for you guys for 700,000. I'm asking for some help there. I've lived there 36 years. I can't feed my cows or let my dogs out.
And I did check with the lawyers on both rumble strips and on speed bumps. And our legal assistants said that advised against it because of the liability. If somebody hits the rumble strip or hits one of those speed bumps and loses control of their car, the town is liable for any damage that happens to the car or to the person.
If they were going 30 miles an hour like the road is posted, it wouldn't be a problem. I told you the speed bumps are 3-inch.
Yep.
There's 2 spec sheets in there that you're called out as 2-inch.
Yep.
Hit with 2-inch speed bump at 30 miles an hour isn't a problem. I'm thinking that the selectmen agreed it was a good idea. Chief Hankert agreed that it was a problem and something needed to be done. I don't know where we go from here.
Well, one thing we had talked about, had discussion, I think, I recall, you had mentioned that the problem seemed to be dominantly between three parties. And I think we had talked to Chief Hankert about having competitors.
Yep.
So I think that one suggestion that might be helpful that if we could communicate with Chief Hankert as practical as possible to town.
Yeah, I should change it for that. They call it 7 if they call it 3.
Because during those time periods that the police are available, you could have one of the cruisers and the man parking their door yard between those hours. Maybe not for a postal dog, but park their driveway, keep an eye on the speed by your home. I think that might be one alternative of addressing some of your concerns. How you guys feel about
that? When I have 93 300 feet away, the leaves go when I have traffic. Come sit on my porch right up. I don't need two 93s, but that's what I have. It is a cut through, and there's too many cars going through here. I'm not here to bust your chops, but I work my ass off for that place to live there, and it's not funny. There's no state laws about speed bumps at all. It's all up to the municipality. It's a matter of legal legislation, my request, your evaluation, and what I plan to do to remove it in the winter months. That's where it ends, and that's approved by ASHTO and the International Society of Engineers. In the U.S. and Canada, speed bumps are installed on roadways classified as local streets, neighborhoods, and connector streets, cut-throughs, and to control traffic speed and traffic volume. In accordance with ASHTO 2004, page 12, Traffic Control 1998, and they're recommended on streets 30 miles an hour or less. So I'm not out of line asking for something. They make it 2 inches high. You take it out in the wintertime. You put up a sign that says speed bumps. 30 miles an hour is fine. No one goes 30.
I think what they're trying to say is where the liability would come in is when somebody is speeding. And then they go off the road because of a speed bump that the town put on there, then we are liable if they're going 50, 60 miles an hour.
Well, then they need to slow down.
I think it's kind of sort of like you know, snowmobiles or four-wheelers are going across property where you don't want them to. And you would think that it's okay to put a cable up there to stop them. But when they hit that cable, you're still in trouble.
It's a town road and it's posted at 30 miles an hour. I'm asking you to help enforce it.
I understand that. But I'm just saying what they're talking about for liabilities is, even though you know they're speeding, all you can try to do is catch them, give them tickets, and do all the rules of enforceability within the law. But you can't intentionally put something there that may cause an accident or damage to their vehicles and stuff like that.
I don't know how a 2-inch speed bump's going to cause an accident.
The bottom line is 25 other people who live on that road have come forward and said they don't want any speed bumps on there.
So there's even 25 people that live on that road.
Well, it was Morrison Road and Hale Road were the two. I think it's awfully hard to say, we understand your frustration, but one person wanting to put them down when we have 25 other people come forward and say we don't want them down, how do you?
Then I'm asking you to get enforced. Well, what do you want me to do? I get 2,000 or 3,000 feet of frontage on both sides of the road. I live there. What am I supposed to do?
I can't even
go out with my dogs. I can't even cross the road with my cows anymore. What, do I hire an attorney? Is that where we're going with this? No problem. I'm trying to be cordial. I'm pretty sure I've done you some favors.
Well, I think, again, if she panics, maybe.
We can ask Chief Hanker to do a little bit more and
have the sign up.
Hang on a second. Ask him to come do some radar checks. You know, 10-15 minutes to do some radar checks on street going through there, and maybe even possibly give some tickets to the people who are speeding. And word gets around, things will slow down. But like I said, I talked to legal counsel about the legality of having speed bumps or rumble strips there, and they said the example they gave was it's a rainy day, somebody hits that at 30, 32 miles an hour, and the jarring motion of it causes them to slip and the car goes off the road, the town is then responsible to pay for that. Pay for any damage.
Who's responsible?
When somebody hits
the person who,
the road?
Yeah, when somebody hits my cows, who's responsible? I told you the last time I was in, I brought the cows home the night of the hurricane. I brought them back at 10 o'clock in the morning. A silver car come down the road and went between half of my herd at 60 miles an hour and never hit the brakes.
Yep.
What do I do about that?
Well,
thanks for your help.
I'm
here for my attorney.
You can send that attorney's letter right
now. I'm giving you people seven bridges for nothing, and you can't help me out with 10 minutes of radar?
Well, we can do it. Well, that's what I'm saying we'll do.
Yeah.
We'll talk to the chief and tell him to come up and...
He's run. He personally has run radar there.
Yeah.
I can go grab my card for you if you'd like.
I talked to Chief Anker. He personally sat there. He said he sat there for 20 minutes. He saw three cars go by. This was a morning. It was not an afternoon. It was the morning rush hour.
And I'm in here just to waste my time and yours. I didn't want to come back here tonight. I didn't want to come here the first day. I lived there.
Oh. Moving on. No more public comment, so we will get on to new business. We have a public hearing, first off. Or do we want to change?
No.
Do the public hearing first. The Somerton Board of Selectmen are holding a public hearing meeting to consider the discretionary preservation easement application pursuant to New Hampshire RSA 79-D for the barn located at 754 Sanborn Road.
Are the persons on?
Yes, Nathan.
Okay.
Sorry about the delay.
No, that's fine.
So this is a renewal of your current easement?
Correct.
Okay. You have the application?
I do have the application and the whole packet and the deed.
This is really the only important page out of it.
Yep, that's the narrative for it. Okay, I think this is, to me, this is pretty much cut and dried. Are there any abutters here? Okay, we have no abutters here. Are there any abutters on the phone line calling in out there in radio land? Hearing none, then I have no questions for the Hearsums.
This is Jim Dick. Just out of curiosity, that's no bearing on it, but I'm just, do you have any idea what the actual age of the barn is?
It's thought to be circa 1840.
Yeah, okay. Drive by it all the time, so.
Yeah. And that was from a reconnaissance survey that the state does.
Yeah.
I think all I'll say is I think it's important that people in town who own barns on property, we should really encourage, and I think the selectmen agree, that they really should be complimented in making the effort to preserve those barns,
yes,
because There's been a lot of people from out of state coming to New Hampshire and Hamilton buying these bonds and taking them out of state. I know of some people from Massachusetts that have stopped at some widows in Hamilton that own bonds on their property and offered to take the bond away for no charge. And so bonds are more and more becoming, you know, valuable, and I think the preservation of bonds in New Hampshire is really significant, and I think it's important. And I think that this is a good example for other people in the community that own bonds to think about doing what you're doing in terms of the preservation of these bonds. That's all.
Paul?
Now you're going to make me look up the RSA, huh?
I was just curious.
I will get you an answer.
79D.
Really too fast.
Not even as old as you are. It's barely as old as Trey.
No way.
Okay, I would make a motion that we approve and sign the covenants, the discretionary preservation easement deed for tax map 22-7-2A in the town of Samberton. I think that covers it.
I'll second.
Okay, I'm just waiting on Julie to get here because we do need a notary.
So, but you can sign the actual application.
Yeah, we can sign
first.
This one, and we'll need to have Julie.
Well, I'm going to vote on it that way. It's all done. This one.
I think Nathan would agree, as a former contractor, that the best way to protect the bond is to make sure it has a good roof on it.
Number one.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstaining? Ayes have it. Motion carries.
And to answer Chief Dexter's question, the eligibility requirement is at least 75 years old.
So. I won't be worried
about it. Anything built in 1945 or before?
That entire application we should stay together.
Okay. We need you to witness this.
Mm-hmm. Nate and Christine, you'll have to come in and sign this. Get filed with the registry.
Sure. Next page.
Johnny, I like your haircut.
What's that?
I like your haircut.
Oh, this one doesn't get notarized. This one gets
notarized. I'll wait as long next time.
Thank you.
Gave you the right one because you should.
I filled in the first part.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much.
So I'm going to step on.
Because you don't have enough to
slide. Okay, so.
You get to use a handy dandy stamp.
Today,
okay, what is it?
I'm not ready for that.
Okay. Not ready to do the updates?
No. I will be a little later on. That's okay.
Okay. Sure. Well, you're at the last two. At the tail end. I was just going to scoot you up.
Back.
scoot you up in front of Paul if you.
Oh, I could talk for a while if you need me to.
We have to. I feel like we should let the one at Pasaki River Basin go first before Paul.
He's they're on the schedule before.
Yeah, they're on here before Paul anyway.
Well, we could move.
Paul, you know we love our our fire chief. I'm waiting to see the firehouse all lit up in red.
Yeah.
I want to see that. Make a special trip over here for
that. Had to find out where he did the legs and then where he
went. Really?
Yeah, it just keeps going.
Okay. It was either that or your firstborn male child, so.
I don't have one, so you can have my husband. Which can be arranged very easily. I can't mess this up. Is that it?
That's it.
All right, see you back later.
See you later on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Julie.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, with that done, we will move on to the Winnipesaukee River Basin program. If you gentlemen want to...
however you want to do
you
it.
You can stay there, you can come up here, whatever you want. It's...
All right.
Okay.
Just try to speak up.
Just need to talk up so that they can.
Oh.
If you want, it's up to you. Just need to talk up so that folks can hear you.
Well, thank you. My name is Ray Corver. I'm principal with KV Partners. We're consulting engineers. We represent the Bay Sewer District, which is part of the Winnipesaukee River Basin Program. Joining me is Mr. Richard Head. He's attorney representing the Basin Program Advisory Board. And what the purpose of our meeting together with you this evening is to discuss and bring you up to date on the governance structure. We were in front of you back in December of 2019, I believe. We talked a little bit about the initiative to change the governance structure and what that took. And present to you a roadmap as to how we can ultimately achieve that just by bringing everybody up to speed by way of background. Under the current governor structure, the state owns and operates certain facilities in the basin program, specifically the treatment facility at the down in the city of Franklin, and also the major interceptors that lead from each of the 10 communities who are part of the basin program. Those communities are from Moultonboro Center Harbor all the way down to the city of Franklin. So under the current structure, since the state owns and operates several of the major facilities, the state gets to decide how to spend the 10 community, basically the monies that the 10 communities are using to fund the program, and the program is fully funded by the 10 communities. The state contributes nothing to the operation maintenance and the capital investments that have to be made into the facilities. So under the current legislation, the communities have what's called an advisory role only. They don't have any decision-making authority on how the money that they contribute to the basin program gets spent. That authority rests with the state through the Department of Environmental Services. So back in about 2014, 2013 timeframe, the advisory board commissioned a study. I won't get into the details of that study, but the end result of that study was that if the communities wanted to take over the state assets and become a community-owned and operated authority as opposed to a state-run authority, that there was a potential, at least a minimum of 4 to 14% savings in the cost of the operation to the communities over a 30-year time period. So obviously that piqued everybody's interest since we were back in 2009, we were staring down the barrel of a $60 million upgrade to those facilities that the state was proposing. That proposal kind of kicked off and raised everybody's eyebrows because obviously the 10 communities and the revenue base that we have amongst those 10 communities, that would have been a big ticket item to try to accomplish. So tonight, we want to present an alternative governance structure to you from what we shared with you back in December 2019. The reason why we're presenting an alternative structure is because as we've been in discussions with the state, at various agencies, the Attorney General's Office, the Department of Environmental Services, we've also been involved a little bit with the Department of Administrative Services. But the bottom line is that the one of the key components of moving forward with a community-owned and operated standalone authority was that the state would transfer their assets to that authority at no cost. The state has balked at that proposition, and essentially there are several of the 10 member communities, while they were behind the authority at the beginning, they are now less inclined to move forward because they're afraid of the cost of that, and frankly, they just don't want to get into the fight with DES. So we went back to the advisory board, went back to the drawing board, and we actually engaged a new group, a governance group. Trish is a member of that governance group, and that governance group is comprised of all the city managers, town managers, town administrators, and we have met over the summer. Three, four times, to discuss an alternative path forward, since at least three of the communities did not want to go forward. Unanimity is an important criteria to try to get here. You don't need unanimity to move forward on any particular initiative, because right now it's majority rules. But we do want to get buy-in from all the communities to move forward, because this is going to require a change in state law. So we have a legislative hurdle that we have to overcome. So the group met over the summer, and we have devised an alternative to a fully a solely owned and operated community system, to something of a more along the lines of a state agency or department, much like the Fish and Game Department. So. That's the background. I don't know if anybody has any specific questions about our current structure, how we got to where we are today. I'll take any questions at this point.
I'm just curious what the state's justification is for not turning over the assets that the 10 municipalities bought and paid for through their payments into the program.
They didn't give any specific justification. I think it's they just... The feedback that we got is, basically we're not sure how to do it. I mean, it's much like the state school situation in Laconia. So it's really something that has never been done before. They're not anxious to do that. In the case of DES, and this is just my opinion, my speculation, but in the case of DES, I think, honestly, they see this as if we have to turn it over, it kind of looks like a black eye that we don't have run the facilities. So from a political standpoint, it doesn't look well for them. Although, in our opinion, from the advisory board, they've done a great job running the facilities for the last, 30-plus years. The challenge that we have as communities is the next 30 or 40 years, is really to bend the cost curve on the operation of that facility. So when that consultant, we commissioned that study, when the consultant came back and said, if you guys really want to bend the cost curve, the best opportunity to do that is to go community owned and operated. So, and we've been pushing that agenda since 2014.
Do you have a copy of the original legislation?
We do not, but we can certainly get that to you.
That's a no-brainer. You should have that. The original legislation creating what we have now.
We can certainly provide that to you, but we don't have it. We don't have it right here.
My other question is, this idea of doing this generated from where? Who put forth this idea?
Pretty much it was a unanimous opinion by the advisory board to move forward with this initiative. Back in 2014,
who recommended? Who brought it up to begin?
Who brought it up?
Who brought this up originally? Whose idea was it to do this? Individual or?
No, not an individual. I just to give it a little bit of historical context here. In 2009, the state the Wapisaka River Basin Program, commissioned a study. That basically, they did a facilities plan. And that facilities plan was proposing to spend $60 million in upgrades at the treatment facility. The state presented that to the advisory board, the 10 communities, and said, we're planning on going forward with spending this money. Well, the next day, there was a headline in the Laconia Daily Sun saying the city of Laconia's sewer rates were going to go up 40% in order to fund that. So when everybody picked themselves off the floor, they said, well, we can't afford this. I mean, we don't have a revenue base to do this. The state basically said, well, that's too bad. You're going to have to pay the bill. We're moving forward with this. So we've been fighting that since that time. So we have we've done several projects. One in particular was a $6 million disinfection facility. We had a lot of concerns about spending the community had a lot of concerns about spending $6 million for a disinfection facility. One of the member communities presented an alternative, a $1.5 million chlorination facility as an alternative. The state did not want to hear about it, and the state basically said, we're building a $6 million UV disinfection facility. The communities wanted this, the state wanted that, and ultimately that's what got built. So,
I was a selectman when this project was done. The Wapisaka River Basin.
Back in the 70s?
Yeah. I've been around a long time.
Paul, do you have a question?
Go ahead, Paul. I'll finish later.
Well, so I was just curious. You mentioned that the state doesn't have the appetite for turning this over to the municipalities to run. They have an appetite to create another government agency under the state umbrella. Is that what I heard you say correctly?
Well, no. Well, the state's not pushing that initiative forward. The 10 communities are pushing that initiative forward.
Okay. does the state have the appetite for that? Because, quite honestly, I'm a little surprised that the state wouldn't just give that up. They're giving up everything else and pushing it back to the individual community. That kind of surprises me. They're holding on to this little project so tightly.
Right.
Has there been any conversation above DES on the political side, either the governor's office or, you know?
That's where we are now.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where we are now.
And when that project was initiated, federal money paid for that.
95 cents on the dollar.
And it came in under budget, which yep. was unique for that size project at that time. And our obligation was to approve connections to the line. No one could put a line in and own it. It was forcing the butter to pay them big money to connect. And we collect the fees and keep a little bit of money and turn the rest into the state. I'm probably a minority on the board in deference to my two colleagues here. I'm opposed to this for the following reasons. Number one, this was a federal project done in conjunction with the state. The state currently owns 75%. And what the state has a habit of doing is, let me back up a second, and I have brought up the argument of 28A, Jim Dick objected, and in looking at that issue, he was correct, because the state, in this case, is not mandating anything. What they're doing is they're requesting to take over a state project. So you're agreeing to do that, so that is not a violation of 28A. But I think that, in my opinion, this is really another administrative layer on top of what you already have, and I really think there should be legislation to force the state to pay the bill. They own 75% of this project. There should be legislation that requires the state of New Hampshire to pay for this, not the towns. Now, my two colleagues will probably see it differently, but that's my viewpoint. And this is happening quite frequently with the state of New Hampshire. Just two small examples. There was litigation on Exit 20 with the sidewalk, all the people with disabilities not being able to walk because the sidewalks weren't plowed at the bridge. And that was resolved, but then the state took down all the lights and said, if you want the lights put back up, the town can pay for it. The same with the Winter Swan Bridge. The state took down all the lights over the bridge and said to Sanditon and Belmont, if you want the lights back up, you can pay for them. And that is really, I think my concern is the downshifting to the local taxpayers by the state of New Hampshire. We really can't afford to do that kind of stuff. And I'm afraid this is going to cost us a lot of money. And I really think that the legislation should be, if I was in the legislature, where I was for 12 years, I would file a bill to force the state to cover the 100% cost of this project. I don't know who you're going to have file a bill on your behalf if you file legislation, but it probably would go through without a whimper in the legislature because you're picking up the state cost on everything. And the state really has no financial interest.
Yeah, the state doesn't have a financial interest in terms of, you know, the revenue side.
But I think what was agreed to originally with this project is dramatically changed by this. What was originally agreed to when they built this thing and got the funding, what was conveyed to the town was a lot different than what's being proposed. And I just see this as something that could cost the town a lot of money that we don't have.
Right.
And what you're doing is you're getting another layer of bureaucracy about what you already have now.
No, we wouldn't be doing that. We would be substituting one for another in this case.
So why not the issue of pushing the state to pay for this stuff, to assume their responsibility?
Well,
legislation.
Well, the state, I don't think the state would open it because they would look at this as this is the service that's being provided to these 10 communities. So you have to ask yourself the question, would somebody in Claremont want to pay for this? Would somebody in some other part of the state pay to support the Winnipesaukee River Basin program on behalf of 10 communities?
It's not a service to the town. This project was designed to clean up the lake, the pollution.
Yes, but it's viewed as a service.
And
to
we
the
paid
town,
for
like
projects in Claremont and other parts of the state. I guess that's my viewpoint. I respect my colleagues if they see it differently. But I'll tell you, if I was in the legislature today, I'd be the first one. I would file a bill, and I'd raise hell and conquer to have the legislature appropriate the money to live up to their commitment in terms of the operational cost and everything else that goes with this program. And this is not how it was originally set up. This is different. This is different than it was back when this first came about.
Well, I think the legislation has not changed since the program was established, and the legislation is very specific that the 10 communities will pay the bill. And that hasn't changed since the program started.
Well, that's my viewpoint, so
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I don't mean to be disrespectful in any way, but that's just kind of how I've seen it from my viewpoint. And others may very well, I appreciate that fact that others may see it very well differently, including, my two colleagues here who I respect. But I just wanted to make my voice heard, even though maybe a minority viewpoint.
Well, we're gonna get into a little bit of the details of what the new authority, what the new agency will ultimately
All right, thank you.
Yeah, could you just...
Sure. Yeah, sure. I will have him go over to Richard, and Richard will pass out some information.
Oh, yeah. These are the ones.
I'll be quick. So the proposal actually would reduce a layer of bureaucracy than what's currently in place. Right now, there's an advisory board made up of communities, and then within the Department of Environmental Services is essentially an agency that runs the program. It is entirely fee-paid. Through the communities, always has been, always will be. And as Ray said, it's essentially the goal of this proposal is to provide control to the communities. Right now, all you have is an advisory role. If the Department of Environmental Services says that's not the path we're going to take, we disagree with you, they're going to spend $10 million than what the advisory board wants to spend, they're going to spend it, and you're going to pay for it. So because of the resistance we had with the transfer of the assets and essentially turning this over into a pure municipal facility, the thought was, okay, let's instead remove the intermediary step of an advisory board and essentially convert that into the agency. They already are involved, and the ultimate goal is essentially to say, DES, you know, the communities want to be able to make decisions and have those decisions stick. So instead of having DES run it, the advisory board would become a Winnipesaukee River Basin Commission. They would have decision-making authority, set a budget, and that budget would be approved through the commission. It would then be operated through an executive director, and essentially state employees that run it will continue to run it, but the municipalities will have a decision on who's hired, how they're hired, in the process. So the draft legislation I just handed out to you is a draft. It's a proposal that we would start with and work with the legislature to get that through. And really, the goal is to say, your residents are paying for this. You should have control over how much they're paying, how they're paying it, and what those decisions are. And what this does is essentially changes it from one agency into another agency and eliminates the advisory board. If you don't need to advise yourselves, just make the decisions. And at the end of the day, this may be a first step. It may be after some time of operation. Ultimately, the state says, okay, we can transfer the assets over and deal with that. Right now, they want fair market value for those assets, which is, makes the process meaningless. So we went back to the original goal of how do you at least get control over the agency, you know, over the decision-making process. And this is the outline of the legislation. And then I also handed out an org chart that was basically lays out what the organization would look like. It's not that much different than what it looks like now, other than creating a commission that decides it, sets the budget, and establishes an executive director to implement those decisions. So direct access to the decision, to the decision makers. And then each of the communities puts on a commission member. And that's the basic structure that we're talking about. What I just handed out, like I said, is an initial draft, but the final draft will look a little different. But in terms of going to the legislature, it is incredibly helpful to have unanimous support of all the municipalities. If you don't, then the legislature is going to say, why not? You know, what's the downside? So the goal tonight is to see if we have your support, at least in moving forward. A number of the communities have already looked at it and decided
so in essence, it takes the state's hands out of our pocket and also takes their hands off of our mouth so that we have a voice.
Right. Not only have a voice, you
get to decide how to spend your money.
Yeah.
That's essentially what you're doing.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, is there another single example of this kind of setup where municipalities are telling the state what they can and can't do?
You're not telling something the state what you can and can't do. You are a state agency.
You're
putting in the members of the state agency and controlling who it is that's making the decisions.
And it's not unprecedented. The Fish and Game Department is structured very similar to this.
They have insurance commission is the same thing, exactly. So there are
thing. So there are structures that. So we're not reinventing the wheel here. We're just creating one of those types of agencies for this wastewater authority. So it takes the ratepayers from the back seat and puts them in the driver's seat.
So I have to imagine this hasn't been done, you know, under a cloak of secrecy. So what's the feedback you're hearing from DES about?
So I've had conversations with them. I've not asked them to expressly say we support or we're not. We obviously have been meeting with them for a period of time, talked to them about the assets. They were resistant to that. Commissioner was resistant to that. There are also issues about transferring state employees to become municipal employees, what that meant is this eliminates that issue. And in talking with Commissioner Scott and some of the staff, he didn't commit to anything. He was more supportive of this. He said, you know, this is more in line.
Better than your last plan.
Better than the last plan.
More in line with what we sort of thought would be a better path.
Right.
But I have not expressly asked him, and I have not shown him the draft legislation yet.
So we're here to answer any questions you have. And
also, by the way, one of the questions was, have you gotten municipal support done?
Are we the first people that you're briefing us on? How have the other people that you briefed us on reacted?
Well, we're getting in front of the town of Tilton tomorrow. It's a joint meeting between the commissioners and the board of selectmen, and then we're going to Franklin and Northfield. The other communities have pretty much expressed support for this initiative. We think we have a majority of them already.
Everybody who's met so far has supported it.
The commissioners that I represent, they're voting on Monday, and they're going to vote on it to move forward. We could have four communities whose governing bodies have supported this legislation. I'm trying to get some unanimity here. So
when you guys came in December, with the landscape that we understood at the time,
right?
I thought this was a good approach, right? We're already paying for it. Let's take it back with the idea that, we've already paid for, we're paying for all this stuff. Now that the state said, well, hold on, not so fast. We don't want to give you the assets because we own them. That, you know, feeds into Tom's argument. Well, if you own them, then
you pay for them.
Well, yeah.
They're not going to do that.
Yeah.
They're just not going to do that.
Well, that's not their decision to make. Okay? The only thing they can do, they can go to the legislature and testify against that. Okay? But that's not their decision to make. That's the decision of the House and the Senate to make. And I just strongly believe that the state is responsible financially for what we're talking about. And I think more and more you're seeing things pushed down small towns and cities in terms of the state wanting us to take more responsibility for financing stuff so the state doesn't have to do it. That's been happening. And I don't know why the push is until, if they want to own the assets, fine, then they can pay for them. And that's just my personal viewpoint and how I see it, and in terms of trying to look at protecting the taxpayers of our community, although you may look at it certainly very differently, and other people may as well, and I'm sure I'm just a minority, and all I'm attempting to do is, I'm probably not going to change any minds, but I'm just sitting here expressing my opinion.
Yeah, but so it raises the question, why aren't we trying that? This is, I don't want to call this a no-brainer, but it's a pretty straightforward proposal. And I think you get one shot at legislation, passing legislation, let me put it that way, related to the basin and the project. If this gets passed, I think we're done. Because it's hard to go back later and say, oh, you know, we really, in second thought, we think the state ought to pay for it because you guys already claimed ownership and wouldn't give it to us when we asked. But, you know, the converse, if you take that approach first, you get something in that says the state ought to take ownership for it and be responsible for it. If that gets shot down, then you can still come back and say, all right, you guys won't take responsibility, you know, we'll move forward.
So, I mean, the issue would be answering the question, well, does that mean everybody gets within those communities gets to then use that system for free? Because it's a user-based system.
Right.
So if you say the state should pay 100% of all costs for operating and maintaining this, everybody in every business that has a connection is using it for free, mm-hmm. whereas in every other municipality where there's a wastewater system,
they're still going to pay a fee as they're paying now.
And that's all that's being paid now is a fee.
Right.
There's a user fee for using the system, essentially.
Yeah, I don't know what other costs were involved. There is a user fee, I know that.
And that pays all the capital costs and all the operational costs and what have you.
There's basically four accounts that get paid for. So there's an administration account, there's basically a capital reserve account, which is called the replacement fund, there's an O&M account. Those accounts are proportioned to each of the communities based on their use of the facilities. That's how the program gets funded. So I can't imagine the state turning around and saying, we're going to pay for all that, and all the users in the 10 communities don't have to pay anything.
Oh, you can increase their fees and pay pay.
But how is that different than what we're currently doing? We're still paying fees. We're still paying fees to the state to run the system.
Paul is first. Paul had his hand up.
Just out of curiosity, because I know the system only runs up a portion of Route 3 for us, mm-hmm. Chamberton. Bay Road, Upper Bay Road. How many users does Chamberton actually have? Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't know, but across the system we have a very small revenue base for the geographic footprint we have and the assets in the ground. We have, I think, about 15,000.
For all 10 communities?
For all 10 communities. That is the challenge that's before us for the next 30 to 40 years, because these assets have been in the ground for the last 30 or 40 years. And there's been a lot of deferred maintenance on these assets. So when the state comes back to us and says, we want to spend $10 million because we want to do this upgrade, and we have to get into another pitch battle with them saying, there's an alternative over here for $2 million. Why can't we do this? We don't want to be in the position we were on with the UV disinfection project where they just said, we're not doing that. We're doing a $6 million UV disinfection project. And I would add to that, they wanted to put a green roof on top of that UV disinfection building for $150,000 because they wanted to be a pilot project for the state of New Hampshire. So the 10 communities were going to pay an extra $150,000 for a pilot project, an environmental project for the state. It took yeoman's work to get that $150,000 out of that project.
That would have to go through the fiscal committee.
No.
This
uses no general fund money.
Johnny had a question. Go ahead, Johnny.
Yes, sir. Who paid for the facilities and infrastructure to be put in the first place? Was it?
Again, based on my historical knowledge, it was 95 cents on the dollar paid by the federal government. The state,
the nickel was paid by probably the 10 communities.
Yeah.
So then the state really can't claim ownership.
Yeah. We've done the math, and the depreciation value on the assets are long gone. Basically, there's one asset based on the research we've done. The state, I think it's the treatment plant is sitting on the land that the treatment plant is sitting on is worth $154,000. Other than that, the rest of those facilities, while the state wants $113 million for those facilities, the value of those facilities is basically zero. If you just do a straight line depreciation on those assets. And the communities, since the program started, because the legislation is written this way, the communities since day one have paid for all the capital expenditures that went into those facilities, all the O&M that went into those facilities, every electric bill that was paid in those facilities was paid by the 10 communities, but basically the communities have paid everything. So our argument to the state was, you didn't pay anything, the federal government paid it, plus we've been paying the bills for 30 or 40 years. Why do you think we should write you a check for $113 million? And they just said, well, that's what the replacement value of the assets are. That's the number. That's where that was where we got stuck with them in the conversation.
The beauty of this proposal is, if you took over the assets and you actually owned them, you're going to have to set up this commission anyway, because every community is going to want to have input and say on it. All you're going to do is change title, but nothing else is different than actually what's in this proposal. All we're doing is saying, rather than shift it from a state organization to a municipal organization, we're just saying, okay, we're going to engage your state and make the decisions for you. And it almost has no practical difference if you actually own them or if you become a state agency. At the end of the day, what you're getting is decision-making control.
Yeah. And the objective here is to bend the cost curve over the next 30 or 40 years for the ratepayers in the Penn communities. That's what we're trying to do here. And we want, the only way to do that is to become a community-led framework. If we stay within the state framework, we have no authority to make decisions about how money gets spent. You just write the check. That's the current situation. If you look at the organization chart, you'll notice who's at the top of the chart. It's the ratepayers. That chart doesn't exist.
Yeah. Of course it does. It's right here in front of you.
Under the current structure. And I will say that there is no structure like the current one in the entire United States. This is unique across the country. There is no other situation where the municipalities are writing the check and the state gets to make all the decisions.
The regulatory agency.
Right? What's that?
The regulatory agency.
Yes, that's a good point. So, and the other thing to consider, since this is a DES bureau, the regulator is regulating themselves. So I do a lot of this work for a lot of other municipalities. We negotiate on behalf of municipalities when they get, for example, a new NPDES permit. So the EPA comes forward with a new NPDES permit. We advocate on their behalf to negotiate effluent limits that they can ultimately meet, because if they can't meet them, they're spending millions of dollars in upgrades on their facilities. Well, when our advocate in front of EPA, because the EPA is the one who holds the NPDES permits, our advocate in front of the EPA is going to be the DES. So the DES is going to have to advocate on behalf of the communities in front of the EPA, and most of those DES positions are funded by the EPA. So we're in a little bit of a bind there on the next round of our 50s permit. Okay.
Not to belabor the point, just to say that based on what you just said, that you send the money to the state and the state makes all the decisions, that can be altered through legislation.
That's what we're proposing.
No, that specific piece can be altered through legislation to stop that practice by the state. Period, without any additional stuff like this.
I don't know, Richard. What do you think? What do you think the probabilities of that approach versus this approach to getting it through the legislature?
They're going to be cutting state budgets over the next biennium. They are going to raise significant questions as to why the users aren't paying in because it's a user service. It just wouldn't pass. I mean, happy to try it, but practical reality is it just wouldn't go through.
Okay, Chief Dexter, so instead of starting sort of morphing a different state agency from an existing state agency, wouldn't it be easier to get legislation passed to give the advisory board a seat at the table for decision-making with the DPS versus creating a whole other state agency? Basically allowing them, almost as a commission, or we'll use the governor and council concept. The 10 communities make up that council portion of the governor's orders that he does. Wouldn't that be simpler than creating a whole other agency?
But that's essentially what this does.
This does create discussion.
What you just articulated, it does do that.
Essentially has the agency as it exists. It's going to function the same, it's just going to be under a different name. It's going to have a state
member on the commission and all of the committees.
There will still be a state at the table. State will still be at the table because of the state agency.
But a separate state agency from DES is what you're
separate state agency you're saying. From DES, but essentially it is the same thing that's being run now. There are state employees that are dedicated to running this facility. They'll just have a difference in name.
We have dedicated employees at the state level that are running the sewer treatment plant for 10 communities.
That we pay for.
That you pay for. And we are also paying for the administrative costs for accountants down in Concord. We found out that 4 or 5 years ago, we're paying $3,000 per computer every year because that's what's under the state procurement contract for IT. Now think about it. If we were a standalone organization, we wouldn't be paying $3,000 a year.
We shouldn't be paying for that stuff anyway. I mean, that's my viewpoint. The other problem you're going to run into, if you transfer state employees to this new organization, I'm not sure you can do that without offering them the same benefit package they have now.
They're still state employees. They don't remain state employees. But they are not changing their status.
And they're going to be working for you folks.
As a state agent.
They'll be working for you folks.
Right. Essentially, it's taking the commissioner out of the picture and substituting the commission in place of the commissioner.
And it puts DES squarely into what their mission is, which is regulatory and enforcement. It gets them out of the wastewater business. And it puts the communities in a stronger position to make their own decisions about how to spend their money on whatever capital investments need to be put into the facilities in order to run these facilities in the most cost-effective manner possible. And we won't spend our time battling back and forth with DES about we don't want a $6 million UV disinfection facility. We want a $1.5 million fluorination facility. We'll just make the decision. We won't have to have that debate ad nauseum. That's how you bend the cost curve. Because what's going to affect the 10 communities, what's going to affect their bottom line the most is the capital investments that have to be made, not the operation and maintenance of the facilities, not the electric bill, not the chemical cost. It's the millions of dollars that we're going to have to invest in order to keep the pipelines operating, in order to keep that treatment plant operating. That's the focus. That's where we'll bend the cost curve, making those decisions for ourselves. Not having the state make them for us.
It's also catching up 40 years of deferred
maintenance. Our capital improvement program is $1.5 million. That is not where our capital improvement program should be. And it's the reason why it's there is because we have to push back on the state from spending too much money. You need the green roof. You pay for the design of the green roof, by the way. And then we took it out of the project.
Anybody have any other questions? Anybody out in the audience? Okay, I would thank you for coming in and giving us the scoop on the commission. And what are you looking for from us?
Well, all the communities, their governing bodies are voting on this because one of the criteria for the DPS is their opinion. They're hearing from three communities at least that they don't want to move forward with this initiative. So DPS has told us that, well, it sounds like you don't have support for this. For the previous initiative. So this is the new initiative that we haven't fully unveiled to DPS at this point. So right now we're looking to see if this is what the communities want. So we're going to each of the governing bodies. We're asking for a vote from the governing bodies to decide if they want to go forward with the legislation and this initiative, then we would like to go forward with the legislation in November. That's the timeline.
So it's basically a motion to in support of proceeding with the
legislation as discussed tonight.
Establishing the commission.
Establishing the commission.
That's what we would like.
So Trish will be voting for Sanderson when the commission votes, right?
No.
Like they want to.
We would like a vote from the governing bodies.
Yes.
So yourself
in support of
the legislation.
Trish will report it, but they're going to want to see a whole bunch of minutes from different governing bodies.
Can you come in with the minutes or the letter from the governing bodies that say we want to move forward? And again, that helps us when we. Do you want to give some feedback as to who we're thinking about moving forward?
I don't want to. I think we have to talk to legislators first. So.
So I'm torn. Tom, you make some good points. My concern, I guess, is that the longer it takes for us to at least take back control of our own destiny in terms of spending, the greater the chance the state's going to step in at some point and throw another $60 million infrastructure project on us without any ability to impact it. So the question is, do you wait another year or two to try to get the state through legislation to take fiscal responsibility for the program, or at least for the ownership, or do we do this now and get, at least try to get, next year, have it within our control to be able to impact, influence, direct how the infrastructure and the operations are going forward. Personally, I think looking at where they are right now, as they start working on the budget, I don't think any legislation that's going to, even if it's their responsibility to take, any legislation that's going to add to the state's costs is probably going to be dead on arrival. Even if it's the right thing for the state to do to step up, I guess I'm. So you did change my mind, but from a practical standpoint, I think moving forward with this new initiative, not to be confused with the old initiative, is probably in our best interest to be able to at least get control of that money and make sure that it's being spent the way the communities want, not the way one person.
Our short-term interest, I think.
Yeah.
I keep going back to a comment you made that, once we go this way, we can't go back. Whereas if we were to go the other way and the state says, no, definitely we're not going to do this, then we can come in with a new initiative. But again, like you said, if we wait too long, we're leaving the gate open so the cows can get out, and the cows being conquered.
But to be fair, though, the other communities have... There are other communities that are in agreement going forward.
Yes.
So regardless, we either you can give your support or they're going to go without it, it sounds like.
It'll be the majority decision to move forward. And this is honestly, the Trish knows, this has been well vetted at the governance group. We've talked about this, and we've been talking about this for 10 years now. So, and we were here in front of you in December 2019. Well, a lot of work happened before we were in front of you. Now going on.
I'm sure you've been quite busy.
Yes. So if, to float another, alternative in front of the community, I honestly, I,
I don't think there's anybody on the advisory board who would think that there was even a slight probability that the state would pay for, you know, the tab for their facilities. I just don't think that's not a real probability. So
unfortunately, that's kind of a, you know, Don Quixote tilting at a windmill.
Right.
It's the right thing to do, but I'm not very confident it will achieve a whole lot.
And I would venture to say that if we try to propose that, a lot of the communities would just simply say, you know what, we're done with this. We're just not going to talk about this anymore. And then we'll take our own decision.
So
even though I have second thoughts about it, I think backing it is what is going to happen in the short term, and it's going to probably be the best thing for us short term wise before we get saddled with more. And Tom, I hear you, what you're saying, and if there was a way, I would be voting for that 100%. But I just don't see I just don't see a clear path to get there.
Okay. I'll make a motion that the Board of Selectmen support the new governance initiative for the Winnipesaukee River Basin program.
I'll second the motion. We have a motion and a second on the floor. Is there any further discussion of the motion? Hearing none, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
The minority respectfully votes no.
And we respectfully accept your vote. And any abstentions? Hearing none, the motion passes 2-1. So,
thank you for your time. Really appreciate it.
Is that sufficient for you, or do you want Trish to put a letter together?
No, I think that's sufficient, but we may need a letter. But I think it's going in the minutes, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So I think the minutes are.
Yeah, it'll be in the minutes.
Yeah, I think that would be fine.
Okay.
Well, thank you, gentlemen.
What's the issue with the state not wanting to transfer the assets?
I think they see it as a black eye. They just, and I don't know why, because we consistently thank them for their hard work and all the effort over the last 30 years. The staff there is fabulous. And that's one of the other big advantages of going this route, is we want that institutional knowledge that the staff has. We want them part of the program. We don't want to lose these employees because they're working on the state.
Thank you. I didn't mean to be argumentative, but...
Yeah. That's a good...
No, that's a great idea.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, moving on. We will go to the change order from the fire department.
Okay, so...
Plus other things.
Other things.
Let's go for other things. I thought you had other things.
Just a couple minor things.
You usually do.
So the Guilford well was in last week to look at prepping for where the water filtration system unit was going to go and where we had to cut the concrete to drain and all that good stuff. So as everything got moved out of that corner where the filtration system is going to go, it exposed the bottom half of the pressure tank. Pressure tank's probably been in there 25 years, and we noticed that the entire bottom half of the pressure tank was rotting out, which after that long being on the apparatus floor, it does not surprise me. So I asked them to put together pricing while they're doing this project, because where this pressure tank is going to be behind the water filtration system. Even though they can get to it, not as easy to get to once the system is installed. So I asked them to put together a change order to the project. The change order came in at $1,914.72 through BPS. And so I'm asking that the Board of Selectmen approve that change order. We do have enough wiggle room in what was budgeted for the project compared to the way the project came in. At 163 and some change, the town meeting vote was 175. So we certainly have the wiggle room for this change order.
Anybody have any questions? I would make a motion that we approve the change order number 001:CE#001, replacement of the water pressure tank to the life safety building.
I'll second.
The funding to come from the already approved.
The appropriation approved at town meeting for
appropriation.
Life safety building.
You said you seconded?
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. Any discussion of the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstaining? Ayes have it unanimously. Motion passes.
We need a signature from you guys. The original one that I get.
We just need one signature, right?
No.
Yeah, it's got three on it.
Yeah, but I thought one was Samberton, one was Bonnet and Page. Okay. Doesn't matter.
No, it's just
there. Doesn't matter.
So, one other quick little thing. A couple quick things.
See, I knew it was coming.
Jim had seen a picture in my phone. We had a problem with the Freightliner, our engine one, that is housed at Chapel. We had noticed a smaller leak out of the pump, thinking that it was the pump packing. We actually had our pump guy come up on Saturday to do an evaluation of it. It was actually leaking so bad that it was a steady stream of water coming out of the truck. So we drained the truck, took it out of service. Our regular pump guy came up, and it's a 6-inch manifold pipe that's completely rusted through. And because of the makeup of that truck, it's not like a Hale pump or something. It's a Darley pump. And so Darley makes pumps, but they make them mainly for like front nose pumpers. And so you literally have to weld manifolds onto them. So when that truck was fabricated back in 2000, that was the way things were done through Central States. And so, long story short, I've gotten in touch with Dorsey, Jay, our normal pump guy, so it's nothing he can handle in the station. It'll have to go to a shop to be torn apart, to be replaced. The pipe literally has to be fabricated. So I've been in touch with the Sourcey, who we're purchasing our new engine from, to get numbers from them, as well as Lakes Region Fire Apparatus that's in Tamworth, who does refurbishment and that type of stuff. And so I sent all the information to both vendors, looking for some ideas of the cost. We are shipping the truck to Tamworth for them to evaluate and look at it. On the same vein, also look at the refurbishment of that truck, because that was the truck we were going to keep, and give me some price. He can't do it really on the road. He needs to get it on his lift. We're going to get a full evaluation of that truck. We're also going to send engine 3 at a later date to get a full evaluation of that truck and determine which of the two trucks, after this dramatic failure of the pump on engine 1, to see which truck is going to be more feasible to keep and be completely repaired, as the gentleman from Lakes Region Fire Apparatus said. Use the word repair, not refurbishment, because it opens up a lot of different doors under NFPA, that if you call it a refurb, that means you start putting frame rails underneath it and all that. So anyway, long story short, that truck is out of service. We do, because of the way we designed Tanker 1, That truck also is an engine and a tanker. It's got a 1,500 GPM pump on it. So even though if we have any problems with our frontline engine, the tanker can be used as an engine, and then we would bring in mutual aid and upgrade our alarm assignment. So right now we're okay, not long term for that truck to be out of service.
Just to give you an idea, what kind of turnaround time you're looking at?
It all depends on when they get into it, but it can. Jay from our regular guy that does our pump work, he said it could be between 500 and 5,000.
Yeah, I mean time-wise.
Oh, time-wise. Really, he's got to order parts. If he's got to fabricate something, it could be a week to 10 days for them to do the repair once we get it there.
So we're talking 3 to 4 weeks.
Oh, anyway, we're talking maybe a month before we were even considering getting that truck back in service. But on the nice thing about that is I checked with Megan Fargus today because we're getting into CIP, so I was looking at where my numbers were for this year, and we're good on our repair and refurbishment account. So I would come to the board because my budget will not sustain this kind of cost to this truck. So I'll probably come to the Board of Selectmen and ask for expenditure out of that capital reserve fund. Right now it's about $112,000 that's in that account. So, which is what it's designed to do. You know, we drop a pump out of a truck, we're not going to cover that cost out of regular budgeting money. So other than that, the project has started on the life safety building. They've got the floor dug up, got the plumbing in today. Water filtration company's coming in tomorrow to set that part of the system. Friday, they'll be pouring concrete back over the piping that they had put in the new bathroom. The crew has been outstanding. They're very good about cleaning up after themselves. Been a very good experience so far with the crew that's been doing the job. So, and our numbers are up 50 calls from last year to date.
Oh, busy. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that's two.
That's all I got, John.
Put our hands in the concrete.
Yeah, it's just going to be covered with tile.
What about the fireworks?
Oh, yeah, thank you. So I asked Trish, I sent her some stuff. She put it on the Facebook, or on the front page.
That's three.
I know, John. On the town's website, I participated in a conference call with the State Emergency Management, the Fire Marshal's Office, the Department of Natural Resources, and because of the drought conditions and everything that's been going on, even with the rain that we had the last night and part of today, it really hasn't taken care of the deep-seated drought that we're experiencing. So with that, last week I restricted all outside burning. That's Category 1 campfires, Category 2 campfires, and the governor's proclamation put a restriction on all Category 3 brush permits. So I have not allowed any burning in town whatsoever. Now, with that being said, I learned something during this conference call that I hadn't known in the 10 years I've been here. Which I've been telling people I have no control over fireworks. Well, lo and behold, I do have control over fireworks. And it comes to be that the fire chief, in conjunction with the town forest fire warden, which is easy because I'm both, can determine if conditions are poor enough, can restrict permissible firework usage in a community. So I have done that as well. We put it on the Facebook post. Trish has put it on the front page of the website. And so we're restricting all fireworks usage. We're restricting all burning until further notice.
Except at the transfer station.
Nope. You were also restricted because you read that.
Oh, I know.
Category 4 burning as well.
Should have seen him in the office yesterday having an argument with the fire warden trying to convince him that he needed to go along with him.
Yeah. No, quite honestly, I didn't. There's a little portion of the rules that allows the fire chief. I was very surprised because we have an ordinance that allows permissible fireworks. The only real ordinance teeth of that is the time.
Yeah,
anything past 9:30, you can't set off fireworks.
Yeah.
But there was a number of fire chiefs that had that same conversation. The fire marshal was like, yeah, you guys can do that. Like, really? We didn't realize that we could. So I know there's a lot of happy people on Facebook right now when I made that post.
Well, the problem you're going to deal with tomorrow is everybody saying, well, why aren't you lifting it? Because I told you. It's
we've already dealt with that today. We probably took, I'd say, about 30 phone calls.
Can we burn now?
Permits.
Yeah, no.
And the problem we have is, even during the conference call, we could be months before we recoup from months of non-rain.
Yeah. And if we don't have a good snow this year.
Well, that's
Wells,
the problem. We saw that great last year.
Yeah.
So that really, when I talked to our new ranger, he said that he dug down into the duff probably 8 to 12 inches and his bone dry. He'd pick up the dirt and it blows away. And that's 12 inches under the topsoil.
Yeah, I was talking to my builder, and he said they were working on a site, and he said it was kind of disturbing when you're digging, and 4 feet down, everything's just kind of collapsing in on itself. Every scoop you take out, it's just, there's nothing.
Yeah. So
our problem is we're coming into winter, and if the ground freezes, typically that's in winter, and we get rain, snow, and everything else, it's not going to soak into the ground.
It's going to run off.
It's not going to percolate down.
The lakes and ponds will catch it, but it's other than that, it's going to run away.
Yep.
Well, hopefully we'll see some more rain over the course of the next couple of weeks. They're really forecasting that. I'm really hoping that that's going to really bolster some of the conditions, because fall forest fire season for us is very dangerous. During the summer, during spring, they're fast-moving fires. They roll across the top from all the leaf litter. This time of year, they tend to bury themselves and get in the root system. If you think you have them out, and 3 days later, you're back because it's 200 yards down the road where it's followed the root systems and popped back up out of a dead root.
Interesting.
So that's all I got, John. Three.
Yeah. Third time's a charm.
One of the things that they're complaining about the wildfires out in the West Coast, they think they've got them out, and they go back a day later, and they're right back. Okay. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on. Highway quotes for crack sealing and salt. That's two, Johnny, right?
Actually, yeah.
No, we're not crack sealing with salt this year.
No.
We're not crack sealing with salt?
As you can see, I got you two quotes. It's kind of hard to find too many companies out there to do this work. So to help you understand exactly what you're looking at here, I had other roads on there. I wasn't sure exactly how far the money that we have budgeted was going to go. So what it boils down to is I would like to crack seal Shaw Road and Weeks Road by where we did the reclaiming this year.
Yeah.
Because I'd like to save those roads so that when we do any work on Shaw and or Weeks, that we can get that all done at once. Kind of, you know, I like doing projects all at one time in larger areas. But so the way it worked out from both of these contractors, the prices that I got was from, one was from Nycom, and the other one was from
Shom
Sweeping. They do crack film. Crack film too.
I got it, yeah.
And the prices to go from Shaw Hill, all of Shaw Road, from the dirt portion to the stop sign, and then from there down to the stop sign at Prescott, from Shom, it ends up being $11,050. And from Nycom, it's $10,000. They both wrote on here the extras, and Shom gave a little bit of a quote for, let's see, where is it here? Burley Hill, that would be an additional $8,250. So, and the other one was, you know, I might be able to do town parking lot and stuff like that. So obviously I won't be able to afford those. But so basically I'm asking for the quote. I would recommend that we use Nikon. The town has used Nikon in the past. I not personally, but I know they've worked for the town of Samberton before. And they do a good job. They work for a lot for the state, and they work a lot for Pike. And there's $1,050 less of the same work as Shom sweeping. And it's in our budget.
Yep. What else?
We have $10,500.
Yep. You know the $500 you can spend.
Right.
Anybody have any questions? Okay, I make a motion that we approve and grant the proposal from NICOM to crack fill for the town of Samberton not to exceed $10,000.
With funds to come from 4312.685 crack ceiling.
4312.685?
Yep.
Crack ceiling.
I will second that.
Okay. We have a motion and a second on the floor. Any discussion of the motion or comments?
The only question is did they give us the state bid price?
They didn't. They actually just came and gave us a quote for what their prices are. And I would say $1,000 is a lot of money. But when you're talking this amount of money, they're actually fairly close to each other. So I don't think they're doing, you know, they're not trying to rake us over the coals or anything. That's part of why I have to get more than one. So.
Now, I guess my takeaway from this is, wow, that doesn't go very far.
It doesn't go
very far. So just think about that as you're, you know where the discussion's gone in the past about crack ceiling. So.
Right. Now, the reason I'm saying Shaw Road is mostly, and I'd just like to grab a couple more years out of it before we have to do anything to Shaw Road and Weems.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, the way I view cracks is on a newer road, you fill the first few cracks. It's really it's a pavement preservation process, so you're trying to keep the cracks from filling with water and then cracking more and so on. But so if you look at it from the very beginning, if you do a crack fill and you get about a 2 to 3 year lifespan out of that, so it doesn't save your road, meaning like every time you get a crack, you come back and fill that crack, because the original cracks that you filled are only lasting 2 to 3 years. So if you're still filling cracks at 6, 7 years down the road, well, the first ones you've done are leaking, so you're just kind of wasting money. So after the first year or two, if you got significant cracks that you want to fill, that's fine. Leave it alone and then wait for the next maintenance process to start to happen. So all you're trying to do is prolong that next maintenance step with something that's a little bit cheaper to hold it over.
Yeah, but it's not, and I guess that's my point. It's not that much cheaper. I mean,
it's really not. Most of the processes to do with the road work is not cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, everything from the work itself to the equipment you have to have, it's all very expensive.
Yeah.
So. Okay. Any more questions? If not, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstaining, I just have it. Motion passes unanimously. Okay, on to salt.
All right, so we're back to salt again. You guys were here last year when I recommended salt. So we got the quotes from the same two companies. Anybody else is generally too far out to come to us. So I'm going to recommend that you allow me to sign a contract with both companies, just so we never get in the position of this company ran out and I can't do anything with the other one. But the prices are a little different. You know, obviously Granite State was $56.50 per ton, where Morton for the salt that we would use is $59.41.
Okay, that's just two different blends of.
Yeah, because the top one is it's where they put.
Must be the Gucci salt.
Yeah, they put an additive in it.
$18 or $14 a ton more.
Yeah, they put an additive in it that makes it stickier and last longer on the road, and also that's another de-icing agent. So you have to have a whole other process to make that work, right? I'm just asking you, I'm recommending that we sign contracts with both, so that I'll order some from both, and one usually has better salt than the other, so that's pretty much it on that, same as we have done in the past.
Yeah, this gives him a backup source.
Option.
Yeah.
So I'll make a motion that we authorize the highway director to sign contracts with Granite State Minerals and Morton Salt for road salt for the 2020-2021 season.
I'll second that. Have a motion and a second on the floor. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstaining? Ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you, guys. Okay. Now, this is not something I'm bringing to you guys. So we finished up our project for the summer for the road recrowning. I've given you one sheet already.
Yep.
But it's yesterday we finally finished it. I put on here, very first one is just from where we started this in spring, from last year's fiscal year's numbers. So I didn't really have those from breakdown. I hadn't started the sheet yet. So on the back page, I just kind of did a quick synopsis of what it all breaks down to. So we completed 11 roads this year on this project, putting the crown back in. And we did a couple of small projects that are in here, but nothing like a day here, a day there. So it tells you kind of where the money came from. We spent $49,105.30 from line 4909, which gave me permission to use 50. And from our operating budget, and this also includes the FY 19, we've spent $30,436.30 for a grand total of $79,541.60. So we purchased this year for this project was 8,817.92 tons of material that we put out on the road for our highway department. We actually had a pretty spectacular year and very pleased with the way it turned out. I believe it's done even better than I imagined. So,
If people bring up one thing, it's always the condition of the gravel roads.
Yeah,
they're really happy. And they recognize that this was not just, a grading. This was the long-term project to put the crown back on, get it back to where it needed to be to last.
Right.
Well, and you and your crew have done a great job of keeping the dust down, too.
Well, we've used magnesium, and I believe the magnesium is actually part of what's holding this together.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all worked together so well. I went yesterday and just Monday after we checked Brook Road, which was the first road that we did this year. And I don't think we're going to have to grade it again. It's still holding together really well.
And do you think that's primarily from the magnesium?
I think the material is a large part of it, but I think the magnesium working together with it, because we now have the crown, so the water's coming straight off of the road to the ditches. And the magnesium helps not lose those fines and allows it to bury and lock in the stone that's in this material, and it's just holding it there and not blowing away, and then stones come loose and roll around and everything yeah. else. So it's all a process. It's just coming together from all the study and then the mulling around in my head and things I've read about other people's processes. And so far, I'm just like super excited. I only got my real test, the winter's coming up, see how that works.
See what happens.
And in mud season, I'm going to put it into my CIP. I may be able to do a CIP plan this year significantly less than what we've had in a few years. So I'm looking excited. I'm pretty excited about it all.
So while you're here, just to keep you updated, Tom, Johnny reached out to or talked to Pike Industries, has been doing a lot of this road work for us, and he connected the Hill Runners that were the the warrant article. Pike said they'd be willing to work with them to help come up with a good cost estimate for them to put into a warrant article if they want to bring it forward again next March. So we've got, you know, an estimate Johnny's done. I pulled strictly the numbers, and bearing in mind those are engineering numbers that are in the road study, and now we've got Pike helping. So we'll have kind of a three-number spread, high, low, sort of in between. And then they called me two weeks ago, and I was going into a meeting, so they said they'd call me back, and they haven't yet. But I can work with them on the language so that they're not tripped up over, you know, leaving a sentence out or something.
Is the suggestion to ask them or help them to do a petition warrant article?
Right. So
is that what we would recommend?
Yes.
And the board, that they do that? They need to have the language correct to sort of help them. And
right.
They need to have a number in there.
Right. So this, I actually got a call from Bethany Hunkins, she's the estimator for Pike, and she was in charge of the work that we did already, which is all completed for this year. And she let me know that she had gotten a message from the Hill Runners, and she was going to call him back, try to set up a meeting for either next week or the week following. So I'm not going to be here next week, but if it's a week following, I'll go and meet with them as well so I can give them a kind of a criteria of what we would be looking for in the estimate.
Well, I think what's good is that no matter what happens, is that I think they would feel that the board has been responsive to which is what's really important.
Yep. So that's going. I just want to make sure you were updated on that, because I know that's been one that you've been the one keeping us honest and bringing it up. So
the other thing I wanted to say is that I know I had raised some objections, I think, to the crowning of the roads, but I think in retrospect, I think doing that was a good idea.
I'm sorry, what?
In the past, I think I raised some questions about doing the crowning of the road, but I think in retrospect, and looking at it, I think that was a good decision that you made.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. But no, you were right before, and it's all good.
But so yeah, that's one of the things we'll try. I think Johnny will call more of those out in his plan, so there won't be a surprise. You won't be coming and saying, oh, by the way, I want to spend $50,000 on roads. It'll be in his plan already.
Right.
That'd be helpful.
Yeah, this is kind of a pilot program. So
yep.
I mean, our bids came in lower than I anticipated. So,
well, you said you had a lot further with the material because once you got into it, the underlying condition was still pretty good.
Yeah.
And good material to work with.
Yeah, we did. We got great material on our roads. The only problem is, like I say, some of the rocks have migrated up, which just happens.
When are you going to start the roadside mowing?
I think it's in October here sometime. You know, because really the mowing. I know you guys wanted to go.
It's just Nate. Don't worry.
Mowing is not really roadside mowing. It is some about. It's not really about grass and all that. Like we want our lawns to look good. The root of roadside mowing is basically so you have smaller bushes that are growing. They don't turn into trees because it's a lot quicker, a lot easier to mow them down now as they're small than it is to come back out with a chainsaw and a chipper. But yeah. He'll use plan on October. He'll be out here because he's finishing up in Moultonboro. He's up there working now.
And keeping stuff mowed down and lower increases visibility in corners.
Big time.
So that you're not. I know I get down to the end of Levitt Road and I'm trying to look up Lower Bay Road to see if anybody's coming, and I can only see a few feet up the road. And I told Johnny, he came down, they came down and trimmed, and I feel safer pulling out of my road now.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Yep. Thank you, Johnny.
Enjoy your vacation.
Yes.
Yeah, just like the first one, it'll be
staycation.
Work. Yeah, it'll be laid up all summer, so now I've got to catch up again.
Workation,
exactly right.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to, my goodness, we have the transfers. Nate's been sitting there so quietly.
What am I supposed to say?
Transfer station update.
I don't know. Chief Dexter doesn't find any issues with chit-chatting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to do that. My dogs normally get fed at 5, so.
Ooh.
Did you get the updated?
I did, but it didn't get into their packet.
That so happens.
Oh, that's all right.
And I'm not going to throw these at you. This is, I don't know, a starter sheet, maybe.
Yeah.
Any advice, ideas, it's welcome at this point.
So I'm guessing right now you just get a phone call and say, hey, my...
Correct, and so I'm
going to... broke?
I have an unorganized list, and it's just the proper way to do it. But I don't know if this is too much. It's not enough. Do we just go back to the way it was?
Well, you thought it was going to help you sort of triage what needs to be done.
That was an idea, but when I finished with it, I'm like, this is a lot going on.
So, you know, my two cents is it's your program to manage.
If
this is going to help you, then go for it.
Yeah.
I like the part at the bottom, and the only thing I would ask you to consider adding, you've got a cost on there, but how about a man hours? Just an estimate, but to know that it took you 2 hours or it took you 6 hours or it took you 12, you know, and when you're doing your tracking and as we're trying to break out the maintenance role from the transfer station manager role, I think that would be a good, you know, one place you could go and you could just flip through and...
So we'll still have two places because we have my little diary.
Yep.
And then we'll have this.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this becomes... You know, a record for the future, so somebody else could pick it up and
well,
go.
Really, I could do that in that same line.
Yeah.
Yeah. So however you want to do it.
Yeah.
But I think it's organizing the work and organizing the requests only makes sense.
Yeah, I agree.
And then, you know.
So ultimately, at the end of the day, my dream was that you would send these out to whomever.
Mm-hmm.
Stating that this is...
Yeah. Absolutely.
Here's the form, here's the process, fill it out.
And if you didn't, then this is why I didn't get to it.
Yeah, and I'd have these forms down here in the office and up at the transfer station, so...
Yeah.
If somebody comes up to see you and you say, well, here's the form, or if they call you, you can say, well, stop by the selectman's office and
pick up
a maintenance request form.
So...
I can put it on the website too.
Yeah. And then people can just download it.
That way they could just print it out.
I mean, yeah. Here, highway, you can do your own, and then library, and that's really about it.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, Wednesday, I know you're not going to believe this, but Wednesday, October 14th, 8 a.m. in the morning, we're going to start moving that container. Page Street Leasing is going to do it. They charge $125 an hour from the time they leave to the time they get back, which is most
October
14th.
Okay.
So we're probably looking between 375 and 500. 375 is what I'm hoping for. If it, so Pac-Man was going to do it for 500, and they're right in Tilton.
Well, they didn't have a thing big enough, right?
They do, but they dragged their feet last year because they didn't want to go up on Knox Mountain.
Oh.
So that's kind of why, when you don't want to do it, you don't have to.
Right.
So that's the scoop with the container. So once that's up on the truck, I want to get the bills paid.
Yep. I talked to Amanda last week about that, and she, we're going to move some stuff around, I think, so that she can help with the rest of that payment for the trailer.
Perfect.
And her budget.
But so the payment for the trailer, she shouldn't have to help with, because
okay.
those are the encumbered funds, because we had a contract. It's this 375 to 500 that we didn't have, we haven't had anybody
under
contract.
Oh, I understand.
So the $900 payment was part of the original contract.
Coming out of the general.
Coming out of last year. But this 375 to 500 or whatever it turns out to be, that's the part that would have to get paid for.
Okay. I really think that was the reason that I was here, was for that. One last thing that I have is, I spoke to Trish earlier this week, and the town of Samerton has purchased themselves a drill set that has two drills, a skill saw, a sawzall, a flashlight, and some of the accessories that go along with that for $670. I lied.
So that Nate doesn't have to,
use his own tools.
Well, I think it's time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right.
As long as you're comfortable.
So no opening tomorrow.
Which is
doing a good job down there.
Yep.
You and the other folks.
Yep.
Well, it's all for fun.
If
I could get the chief to let me burn some brush.
Well, at some point, stop taking it, too.
Well, so I have enough material to build one more bunker if I felt the need.
Right.
And I can pile it out in the middle, push it around the machine. So I'll probably go till November, and then I might shut it down.
Yeah. Well, wait, you heard him. Wait, look, it may be
next year
before we get
maybe
back to normal. Now, he may be able to lift some of the bands, but we're not going to be back to normal. I'll talk to the board members about it, but you'll be seeing CIP stuff coming out, but I will work with you. I asked Keith Fixer for a copy of his spreadsheet where he tracks his stuff, and I'll take that and I'll try to put one together, just a preliminary one, put one together for the transfer station, and then we can sit down, you and I can sit down and start.
That would be good. So
you'll have to, fill in how long is this thing going to last, and, when.
So I've done all of that except for the compactors and the balers, and they're supposed to call me this week.
Okay. So once I get that kind of filled in, then you guys can sit down and we'll fill that out. And I brought it up with the CIP committee on Monday when we met, and they thought it was a great idea. They understand that this first year is just about kind of getting a plan in place. So they're not expecting perfection.
Right. So can I ask this? I was playing around with this a little bit today, and I somehow came up with a printout off of the website, and it has it. It's under the highway department, truck 6, but it says the F-250. And you go all the way over to the end, and it says there's $9,000 there. If that's true and that's for that truck,
that's your truck.
Well, right. Why wouldn't we be using that to do the repairs?
So we'd have to look at which fund you're looking at.
Okay. But it's under highway department.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And nobody's ever caught up that it got transferred to transfer.
Right. And then the funds that I was talking about last time to go back towards the trucking and weights.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Well, Nate's here just quickly, because you know what that thing is in the other room, that malfunction. What is that?
Oh, so the furnace.
The furnace.
You have a dual furnace system. I'm not 100% sure why, because the building's not that big. But besides that, the older furnace blew the fan. So I had Rob come over, and he put a different fan in that he had at his house, and he's going to be ordering the right one. So it's up and running. It's just...
Which Nate and I sort of started talking about, we're not really sure when the last time the furnaces got serviced or any of when the HVAC got...
So, and there's no records of any of that. Rob was supposed to service everything last December, but he didn't do it because he was busy. So I'm probably going to have him come right through and do everything like that.
Rob.
So Robert Osier.
Okay.
Yeah, give him a form.
Hey, fill one of these out.
And he's the person that we use in town for that stuff?
Well, since I've been here, yes, because he's the guy that I always use. I don't know. I don't know, unless you find some records that...
I have no idea who else would do that.
So he's always, like yesterday, he was right
And he
here.
Does, like, furnace repair and maintenance and HVAC stuff?
He doesn't do HVAC.
Oh, okay.
He's a boiler furnace guy. He's broader than that, but he doesn't really like to get into... And I can get all of his information over to you, too. Case for some reason or not.
We want to make sure that we keep those things in good working order.
Correct. Like the filters and all that type of stuff, I can deal with, you know, every fall. You know, we don't have to pay him to come in and do that, but.
Tune-ups.
So it's broken and now fixed for now.
Okay.
Thanks,
Nate. Anything else?
Nope.
No, go feed the dogs.
I'm going to go feed the dogs.
They don't take your arm off first.
Right. Well, they're only that big, so I don't know about that. Yeah.
Okay, next thing is the town clerk update.
Oh, I'm going to go grab her. Bye.
And I'm going to take a quick break. Ooh,
baby. I already had one.
I did this morning.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. More napkin?
Yeah.
Health food.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You want to take them home to Z&G?
They're not having hands right now. I already had a donut this morning. I had the Boston cream.
Oh, a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Board of Selectmen. All right, we are back. Apparently this two-hour thing is real, and it keeps cutting off, so we're good for another 2 hours.
Hopefully we'll be out of here before then.
That's not me.
Where's Julie?
You went to get her.
Yeah.
There she is.
Late night
for who?
Me.
Oh, all right. That's fine. I'm fine with that. Okay. So, 409 requested absentee ballots so far.
409.
Yeah, and there's more to enter. So that's good. We sent out we did a whole mailing on Monday.
Yeah.
So I am gonna have to consider closing the office some days for a couple hours. It's too much.
Well, so you gotta be able to track and reconcile them all, so.
Yes.
And not have plus one, minus one.
Yes. All that good stuff. So anyways, so that's going good. I changed the polling place to the school. I gotta send out an email for have a training for election workers. I gotta make sure on the date with Trish.
I thought you said
10 seconds. It probably will have to do that. We also have to consider putting an ad in the paper telling people the polling place has changed. They probably should have sandwich boards up saying the polling place has changed.
Get Paul to put it on his message board.
Yeah.
So I think we got to do a lot of
something that's a post office.
We have some sandwich boards. I think I might have to order some signs to go on them, or so at least we can say, you know, voting. Yeah. We should put them out so people know ahead of time.
You should put it in the
sun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get
on the sun.
We gotta. So we have to do that. We have to advertise the polling place.
Yeah, I feel like something to tell you more.
Yeah, we can do that. You'll help me with that.
Yeah.
So, what else was I thinking? So, deeding property is supposed to be October 22nd. We're still a go with that date. We only had three on the list left, and I got a call today, and number three is going to sending a check today to cover it for just the deeding, just the deed amount. So we're down to two on the list for deeds. So we can talk about that. I don't think there's any reason to have a special meeting about those two? Not for those, but we can talk about that. So I had told you earlier, so the last tax bill, 96.76% has been paid of the 2020 P1, which is pretty good. And so 19, 1, and 2 went together as a lien, and we put liens on all the people who didn't pay for that, and the percentage of that paid is 97.33. So we're looking, I didn't have time to type it up for you, but we're looking at about $133,000 owed for the liens for 19, and this $164,000 is owed for 2020 P1. If that helps at all.
Yeah.
So revenues are good.
How did we make out this year with the voting registration? Did that turn into anything? Or?
No, we did. I can give you, I don't have it.
I just have to stop it.
Very good. It was a great year for both.
What it's estimated at right now.
Oh, you're working on the 434?
Yeah. Oh, I could give you the actual.
Yeah. I mean, just do it.
Really good, because when you think of it, it was a great year to boat.
Yeah, everybody, the Marines were getting angry that you were taking their revenue.
That's okay.
They could be angry.
Yeah. Yep, so it's good. And then there's extra revenue to the size of the motor. It's $1 or $2. And yeah, the last time I looked, it was like $1,700, and it cost us $500 for the
I was going to say, it more than paid for itself, yeah. So.
And we're done. And I don't believe we pay again for that. I think that it's in it, but I will make sure.
Okay.
Good. Still working on the budget.
Me too.
You get till Friday. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, okay. I'm alone on Friday. So anyways, I am going to put some dates, like I said, tell you some dates. I am going to be closing the office sometimes, and I'm going to put it out this week, the next week. I just need time.
A lot.
You got to get the ballots out, and you can't be interrupted when you're doing it.
And she's the only one that can. Well, you and your...
Yeah, and Gloria are doing it, so...
Yeah. Okay.
We can't help her at all.
No. There's no help.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
I wasn't going to say anything.
That's okay.
Okay.
I think that's it.
The other thing we had the very done people, the CARES Act money.
Yeah.
I was going to talk about it in the town administration report, but came back and said, oh, you had more absentee ballots than what we had originally stated on the form. So I emailed them back, and I was like, well, okay, but this is what we had for a number, and they're saying the Secretary of State said our number was...
Different. I don't know. I know how many we had because we opened them.
Yeah, I was there.
So, and you know, you yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So,
well.
I don't know if they're counting because we had so many. They didn't send us enough regular ballots.
We had to
take the absentee ballots and use them
in the regular.
Because they're the exact same ballot. Yeah, right. So I don't know if that messed up their number because that was reported on the moderator's thing. So
separate count, yeah.
Yeah. So
we had said that we had submitted, 246, and they said 600 something.
Yeah.
That sounds like.
It sounds like it's my absentee ballots. Yeah, we had like 283 or something, but only they don't all come back.
Right.
But they're doing it on mailed, I guess, and not returned. So. The only other issue I see with absentee ballots that has already happened, for lack of, I'll just say, people who usually go somewhere else for the winter, they're out early. They haven't left yet. And some of their ballots have gone to where they want to be sent.
The snowbird.
Where they requested them to be sent.
Where they requested them to be sent. I know, I wouldn't send them, you know.
Right, well,
because
we're not one of those places that just mails them automatically, right?
No. So anyways, I've already, I called HAVA today, and they instructed me on how to handle those situations. So if those people... they have to come see me, and we have a solution for them.
Okay.
But if they are going to Florida in a week, their ballots, they have plenty of time to get their ballots back.
Yeah, but if they're going at the end of October, they got a problem.
Yeah. They're quick. I mean, the ballots were quick this year, so.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, so maybe that's something in... 4 years, you say, if you can remember. We're going to have the ballots earlier. Are you sure you want them? Or you want them? And I
choose wisely.
Yeah, and I prefer to mail them. It's easier for me to mail them because it's easier to follow the whole process.
Right. Through.
But I get it. That's it.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Good job, Julie.
So,
yeah. Okay, moving on to old business. September 2nd, 2020 meeting minutes.
I had an email, and I believe actually you
guys have a letter from Mrs. Wright. Will you?
Yeah, but not related to this.
Oh, there's a different one. Okay, I don't know. I'm sorry. I didn't read them.
Okay.
Anyways, she was concerned about the minutes from September 2nd and a false accusation, apparently. And she would like them to be amended to change, to be changed.
Yeah.
However, I don't. I don't think what I said was untrue, because that is what happened.
So it's the difference between the town administrator or the board accusing her of harassment versus town administrator relaying a conversation where somebody else said there was harassing behavior.
Yeah.
And so what Trish relayed is what she was told. So from that perspective, the minutes are accurate. She taking exception with what Trish was told, which is a different issue.
Yeah.
It was not my intent to be untrue or slanderous about anybody's character.
Yep.
That can be put in the minutes.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good idea.
You know, and without, so yeah, there's three parts to this conversation, and with only one of the pieces here, Trish, you know, we've got Ms. Wright's position. Without having, and I don't see any need to drag the Maxwells into a conversation. I'm okay with removing that portion. It's kind of hearsay. Fine, I get it. I do want to be clear. I don't think what's in the minutes is an accurate statement. I mean, that's the conversation you had. That's what you reported. With us making no judgment one way or another about whether or not the behavior was happening, that's just what you were told, and you provided the sound advice. Which, if that's the case, that becomes a legal issue. So
yeah, and Trish has no way of knowing whether it was true or not. It's just is what she was told.
Yeah.
And she just relayed what she was told to the board. So.
So.
I have no objection.
Yeah. So I'll make a motion that we amend the minutes of the Board of Selectmen meeting from September 2nd by removing the statement, T.A. Stafford said the homeowner of the other property complained that their neighbor was harassing them and taking pictures of their activities, and T.A. Stafford advised them that this would be a civil matter.
I'll second that motion. We have a motion and a second on the floor. Anybody have any comments or discussion?
No.
Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstaining? Ayes have it. Motion carries unanimously.
I will make that change.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, I guess while we're on that topic, we did receive...
I can go get the other...
Yeah.
Response to the...
And this is just additional.
Oh, I did more.
I'm stopping to pick up my mail. So.
Okay.
I have mine at home.
Jim, Trish?
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, okay. Ray Massey here. I just wasn't hearing any voices. I didn't know if I was still connected.
There's reading going on.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, well, enjoy. Sorry.
We're still here. And I think she probably just heard that.
I think she may be referring to my comments that I've driven by and took a couple of pictures
in
the place.
We've all been by.
I did get out and didn't smell anything. I will go by again, and I will make sure that I get out.
Well, let's face it. People may change their behavior, but you're not going to change animals.
No.
So,
and you're not going to change the smell.
It's going to be there.
And the smell's either going to be there or it's not going to be there. So I will go by again and I'll do the sniff test.
Yeah, to me, there's nothing new presented in that letter that hasn't already been addressed. Everything they've done has been in compliance. Matter of fact, the right to farm section that she quotes out of the zoning ordinance is actually it favors the folks doing the farming, not the people around. I do take exception with the claim that the health officer has a conflict of interest. I mean, it's a small town. People know each other. If you're going to assert that every time somebody is involved with a resident who's got a pre-existing relationship that constitutes a conflict of interest, then nothing will get done.
Right.
And you know, that there may be an unusual, an additional thing here where Mike did in fact sell the property, but that has nothing to do with his enforcement and has nothing to do with him executing his duties as the health officer. So I understand the assertion, and I reject it. He does his job professionally. He does it thoroughly. Everything he does is backed up by reference. And frankly, there's no benefit to him of finding one way or the other than enforcing the health code. So, I don't have anything else. I haven't heard anything other since this letter, so I don't know if
if she received the board's response or.
It was mailed out.
Yeah.
So.
And I don't quite understand what she's saying here with the last sentence on this page. Accepting any practices not conducted in accordance with the state rules and regulations.
No. Everything in the zoning ordinance is in accordance with 674.
Pretty much a catch-all phrase that's put on there. So.
So. Other than that, I got nothing. Katie Gonzalez over there.
Excuse me. She was asking you. Probably the letter was in there. I don't have it.
Did everybody get one of these?
What is it?
No.
The health trust.
I don't know.
The hearing on proposed bylaw amendments.
Oh, I think I did get that. By a little way.
You want a copy of this? That's for you.
All right.
That's from the health. Okay, moving on. Town Administrator's Report.
Okay. So, just a reminder that our auditors will be here next week. And I don't know if you had an opportunity to complete. Did I send you guys the governance questionnaire? All right, I'll send it to you. And either all of you or one of you, each of you, can complete it. That's fine. I'll make sure you get them. It just goes over questions that they want the board to ask to answer specifically.
Individually.
She just says the board. So it can be individually. Absolutely, I would imagine if you each submit one, they would be happy with that too, because you might all have different opinions of things. So.
Yeah.
The town car went in for an inspection today and everything passed, and Chief Hankert has said that he has gotten into the practice of undercoat spraying his vehicles because it helps keep the rust away and it helps preserve the life of the vehicle, and so he suggested that we consider it. It's $250 to do the first spray, and then subsequent years, it's $175. I don't know if there's more
proof than names. But this vehicle was one of his that he had in the program, so.
I thought about that too.
It should just be a continuation of.
I don't know when Chief Hankert started this practice.
He's been doing it for a while.
I think he has. I think this should only be $175.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, I don't know if it's already been sprayed.
Yeah,
I don't think it has been sprayed because Northeast, when they looked at it today, they said that, when they looked at it yesterday, they said that there was very little rust. It would still be appropriate to spray it.
Well, it's very little rust because he's been getting it sprayed every year. We need to check with Chief because I'm positive because he's been doing that with his entire fleet.
Yeah.
And he swears by it.
Yeah.
And since that was his vehicle, up until the town, we took it over for the town car.
He specifically told me what the initial cost would be, and then he said, if there's rust on it already, then you really shouldn't do it, and that's why he had the Northeast look at it first.
Yeah,
I can definitely
Northeast check. Isn't where he takes them, though.
No, he takes it to a different person in Tilton that is the spraying.
Um,
Nonetheless, either way, is that something that you would like me to pursue for that vehicle? The only thing is now that if we do that, we can't use, if we were to go through a car wash, you can't use the undercarriage spray.
The high pressure sprays, yeah.
Yeah.
Which the ones around here don't have anyway.
They
wash them here.
Winterstorm does.
No, it's not the under. These are the ones. It's got the rotating one. But
it doesn't spray underneath your car.
Okay, I thought
yeah.
I don't know.
They advertise this as a high-pressure undercarriage spray.
Right.
So.
Personally, I mean, I go by Chief Hankard, and he's a very strong proponent of this, and I want to see us get as many years and miles out of that car as we can so we don't have to replace
we
it.
We have to keep our good things good.
Yeah, and it's only got 100,000 miles on it, so I think it's worth looking into.
Okay. So I talked about the CARES money and the issue with the amount of absentee ballots, but then on the other hand, we did receive our full Gopher submission transfer of the $70,000 this past week. So that's good. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Just like I got an email and it said, here you go, here's your $70,000.
Okay. Great.
Great.
I like those.
Yeah. And then I am working on the MS-434. I've been learning a whole lot now that I've been through a whole year of this. It's sort of, I would think that I can sort of tell where the things are coming from and where we should be putting them, but there are still some questions about those. We can talk about that, if you want to come in and sit down. There are some questions from the DRA as to where... We had questions as to where these amounts were coming from and where they should be allocated to because the budget lines don't.
This is on the revenue side, right?
The revenue.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a line, a revenue line on the 434 for I think it's other taxes.
Other fees or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. And it had $100,000 in there, and we'll claim ignorance because. Last year, neither of us knew what we were doing, and it was one of those. So, what we learned 2 weeks ago in one of the NHMA seminars is this: the 434 is your last chance to adjust the revenue for the entire tax year.
Okay.
So, when we were trying to do the tax rate setting and do the finalization of the information last year, that number was already in there, and we didn't know where it came from and.
That came from the total budget of the town from the previous year.
Yeah. So that was one of the things that DRA had a question about is were you expecting to get money from somewhere else that, or maybe it was just on the wrong line?
But then if you look at the breakdown of it, it does say that in the breakdown of our revenues, in between all of the numbers that the DRA gives you and part of where to put in the revenue, are the transfer station revenue.
Okay, so it's in there.
Yeah. Okay.
But, so that's why we need to take a good look at that. You know, that's, so things like the motor vehicle, that's why Trisha's got all that motor vehicle registrations and the boat registrations and, that sort of thing. But we'll have to take a look, like at the transfer station, now that we've increased the rates, get that new number to put in there, because it's going to be higher. It's going to be a decent amount higher.
Yeah.
Get all those things finalized.
Yep. And the last thing was last week, last Tuesday, I believe it was, or last, I don't remember what day. Last week at some point, I received a...
It was Tuesday. That was the day I was out.
91A request. From a resident to provide information in regards to some of the welfare expenditures. And while that was a very lengthy right to know request, I think it brought up some things that potentially would need to be, I think the board needs to consider. Namely some of the
so
in getting the collecting the information together.
Yeah.
There appear to be some gaps, yeah. Right? And being able to track everything clearly from, you know, here's the receipt, here's the voucher, even down to some of the welfare to the payments that are being made against mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
Some had mortgage statements with them, some didn't.
Right.
Paperwork was incomplete.
Well. What Trish was given to answer the 91A seems to be incomplete,
yeah.
And I think it raises some questions about, you know, the general state of the program, and I don't think it's been something that's been looked at in a while.
When the audit is here, can you ask them the welfare expenditures? Is that something that
that would be something at? That they you should be considering?
And I guess my question on that is, how do they handle other towns when they look at the finances of the town? How they look at the welfare budget? How they got, you know?
Well, yeah.
How the 91A request that was submitted is. Can you have a response that you? To him?
I can send you the response, or I can't send it to you, but because you don't have email.
She'll get you a copy.
I can get you a copy. I can show you what I have right now, if you'd like.
Yeah.
And.
Well, I think. Thank you.
So what I would recommend, I think there are questions that we probably need to ask and want to have a discussion about. So I've started with some, you know, thought maybe we could give these to the welfare director, you know, give her a couple of weeks to start collecting some answers so that we can sit down and have a, you know, discussion about the program.
Well, it was requested that you'll have to excuse some of my chicken scratches. All supporting documentation for payments, receipts, vouchers, etc., with respect to the following disbursements made by the town of Samberton. There was seven of them spanning from December of 2016 to February of 2020 for Demula's Supermarket and First National Bank of Omaha, which is the town's credit card. And then the person asked for mortgage payments from the expenditure report for the fiscal years for July 2018 to 2019, and July 2019 to 2020, and there was a handful of those as well. Any liens placed on them and any of the corresponding documentation?
How many mortgage payments you made?
So this is just the ones they asked for.
Yeah.
So it was a specific list of payments that they wanted to see the supporting documentation for and the liens associated with it. Now, that's an area where Chris checked with the lawyers, and although liens are public information, anybody can go search a property and see a lien.
So here's the
we couldn't provide them information that identified the property, the tax and map number, you know, obviously the individual. So essentially the lawyer told us on the lien question that we basically had to say we can't provide that information, you know, in accordance with the RSA 165 limitations.
Yeah, it would basically be it.
Anything you would, it would be a blank paper that said lien.
Okay. These are all the DeMola statements. Yeah. One of the problems here, that I'm not sure that we need to check on the consistency of is whether or not we should be providing gift cards for people. And
well, no, I think we can put some restrictions on this stuff.
Yep.
Even though she's a resident.
Yep, you are the agent to extend.
And really, these are all copies?
That's my, this is a
copy. These are your copies.
This is the one copy that I have, and I scanned them into myself, so I have a scan.
You what? No.
She can make you a copy.
I can make you a copy, if you'd like.
Yeah, I'd like to have copies. That's not a problem.
Not a problem.
This all in? Can I see any questions?
This is, except for the lien.
Yeah, I'd like to have a copy.
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
You can take this copy, Tom.
Well, I think I would suggest, number one, is that maybe Trish, when the auditors come, ask them about the welfare expenditure, and if that's something they can look at, or how they would look at that. I'm sure they may go to other towns, they look at that.
I think that they would have to look at the way that,
it could potentially put us at risk to not have the appropriate, it could be a potential liability to not have the appropriate backup that we're supposed to have in the follow through.
I think we have talked about it before. You had gone for the seminar I had on the welfare.
Yep.
I think some of our guidelines go back to 1985. We need to update. We need to update the instruction. We need to approve guidelines.
Guidelines,
yep. The town and has to follow. I think that's a requirement in the state law. I object to using the town credit card. I just think that's a horrendous practice to use the credit card. And I think that
I've been trying to get everybody to get an invoice for services because I just think that puts us in a better position.
You do a voucher or an invoice, and the payment goes directly to the
yeah.
Vendor.
Yeah.
You know, on I don't think it's the town's obligation to make mortgage payments on behalf of people. I think that's the issue between the homeowner and the finance people that they dealt with, the bank or whatever. We're not in the business of paying mortgage payments.
No,
but welfare is for those that have an expressed need, an immediate need, and it's just to help people who are indigent. It doesn't. Paying mortgage payments is not.
Yeah, but if someone's in a bad way for a month or two, it's way less expensive to move an entire family.
But you don't know what the background is.
No, that's true. I don't know.
Okay. So I think that's out of our purview. The other thing is rental payments. The state of New Hampshire has what's called, when they give assistance to families and individuals, cash assistance, they have a standard of need.
Exactly.
So they don't pay, if the rent is $1,500 a month, which is probably quite a bit of money, if that should be the case, and she's paying that, she shouldn't be, because I think she should just pay
whatever the standard of need is. If it's 400, 500, that's it. Landlord can accept it or not accept it in the FIPPA. Okay. But that's abusive, in my opinion, to do that. The credit card, I think, is out of line. I think gift cards are not appropriate to give to people. Use vouchers. And if the vendor doesn't want to accept the voucher, then they have to go someplace else. But I think there needs to be control on it. And I think the bottom line, we're spending $100,000 a year on welfare. And that's a lot of money for a small town.
Yep.
You look at Tilton, looked at their information, which is a larger community, has a higher need in terms of the people there. The vendor payments for the year is $65,000. I think there's an issue. We have the fiduciary obligation, it comes back on us. And the other thing I don't understand is Community Action Program has a fuel assistance program.
Right.
But in order to get the fuel assistance, you have to meet certain financial eligibility requirements, okay? And why are we giving fuel assistance when people should be going to CAP?
Well, especially if we're going to be supporting CAP through our outside agency process.
Yeah. And I'm just going to throw it out there. I think that the options that we can do is that some of the towns that I have gone to, and not as a selectman, but in my work, at little different places, in a lot of towns, the selectmen are the welfare agents, and there's no cost. They just do the work. The applications come in and they sit and make a decision. There's no employee doing it. In other places, I think we did it for a while here, is that we had an existing employee in the town office here do the welfare applications and assessment as part of their duties.
When was that person, when did the position go from appointed to elected?
It's been elected for a long, long time.
Okay.
So the other option would be to consider a warrant article to change the job from elected to appointed.
Correct.
You can appoint Melody, but I think doing that, the selectmen then become the party that's responsible for approving, expenditures.
You're still responsible. I mean, you guys are still the agents to expend all of it.
So,
and you guys can set up those welfare guidelines.
The other thing that you can do, some towns have done it, which is pretty intriguing, is that they had a warrant article to create an expendable trust for welfare. And what they do is they put money into that every year, and they make the selectmen the dispersing agents of that fund.
Mm-hmm.
And as they put money in there, and as it goes up, it substantially reduces the yearly expenditure for welfare benefits. You know, that's something that some of the towns do. I think, and then, you know, there was absolutely nothing in the town report.
So,
I think we need to have a serious conversation with Melody about.
That's the list of questions you have? You want me to send that to her? Or no?
Well, let's see what. So, just two things. I don't disagree with what you said, but just to be clear, and this is right out of the NHMA welfare guide.
Yeah.
Local welfare has no time limit or amount. If an applicant remains eligible and complies with properly imposed conditions, the duty to assist is indefinite. So, you know, there's the emergency situation, but if there is a case where you've got a, you know, say it's a single parent with kids and, you know, they can't do daycare because they can't afford it, so they can't, that could go on for 10 years. By the regulations. I mean,
but my point is, I think we get caught up in the people's stomach is stomach. We get caught up in the money, and we get caught up in the eligibility for welfare. And I think when you look at people's situation, if you have a case, you know, a lot of times there's outside resources that you can bring to bear on that situation that do not require a town expenditure.
Okay? Right. And that's one of the questions is what are we doing to help transition people off of assistance? Right. It's not just get them on. We have a duty to take care of them. I get that, but there are lots of resources, as you say, that can help move them off and relieve that burden. And then the standard of need that you talked about, that's something that's supposed to be in our guideline and we're supposed to update for our town.
Yeah.
So
can we get a copy of some? Is there a model guideline available that we can look at?
So when I asked NHMA, they pointed their booklet, which isn't really a sample guideline. I mean, it's just all the best practices, and they're actually updating it this year. This is the 2015 or 16 version. Because I asked that specific question. Do you have a sample guideline, that we could look at? We have a copy of ours, which I think is it 1988? No.
I don't remember.
It's pretty old.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems to have the elements to it, but they haven't been updated in a long time.
I grabbed Meredith, and the language is very similar. The language hasn't changed. It's just what you had said.
The specifics, $100 for rent for housing was good 30 years ago, not so good now.
Right.
And by the guidelines, we should not be paying any more than whatever we established the standard to be.
Right.
Which gets to your point,
How is this stuff being reported back to us?
It's not. That's
right. It has not been. In the time that I've been here, it's not been reported to the board.
Yeah. I'd like to see it reported by category.
Right. It could be reported anonymously so that we're not revealing individuals.
Lump sum. What did we give out this month on gas? What did we give out this month on groceries? What did we give out this month on gift cards? What did we give out this month? And those are just by category, not by individual.
Right.
So that we don't violate any rules. But I'd like to see what we're spending,
Yeah.
So,
I'll bring it up again. I think I brought it before. I'll be honest. I had, when Melody first came in here and sat, we talked to her about welfare, and she's, this is the first time a board of selectmen has been interested in what I'm doing. Okay. And then, I asked, wasn't it that many, but then I asked subsequently, the town administrator at that time for the welfare guidelines. And she said, I'm working on them. That's what she said. It's on tape. So I didn't hear anything, and I waited about 6 months later, and I brought it up again at a selectmen's meeting. And Katie North typed up that she's elected. She can do what she wants. That's what she said at the meeting. And then she turned around and she called Melody on the phone and told Melody that Tom Saltall was out to get her. And Melody supposedly said to her, well, I'll get him. I got in a car and I went to the hospital to see Melody when she had the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a conversation about that. And I said, I never said anything about getting you. I said, we're just concerned about the budget and the welfare and what's going on in the community. And I never said anything to you about that. I was out to get you. And so that kind of dropped. And I think And my concern, we never hear anything about updates in terms of what's going on in the community, you know, where the areas of needs are for people. And I think some of the payments I object to. I think if the people in town knew that we were making mortgage payments on behalf of people, I think they'd be pretty concerned about that. But that's not the role. That's not the role of welfare. And then I asked a question about what Melody said, and she said it here. And the town administrator said it. Well, our expenses are high in welfare because we had 3 burials this year, and they had to work with some beans. Well, what's using the state in terms of people that have died that have no money, the funeral homes never put on a lousy funeral. It's
right.
Not in their interest. You know, what they do is they rotate the funerals from one funeral home to another. And in the course of talking with Melody and the town administrator, so we have a contract with Wilkerson Bean for funerals. She has no business signing any contract. And she also said that we have a contract with the oil company for fuel assistance. Melanie has no right to sign any contract. That's on the purview of Board of Selectmen.
Right.
I just think we are spending a lot of money for a small town, and I think some of the expenses, I think, are inappropriate. And it needs to be looked at. And you can't just say I'm elected, I need $100,000 in my budget, period, see you later.
Right.
The selectmen are ultimately, people need to understand, the selectmen are ultimately responsible for the finances of the community.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys feel a little differently.
I think there needs to be, you know, a real in-depth discussion to understand what's being done. You know, John, to your point, a regular report of the expenditures so that we can see the trends. You know, and there's a lot of information that can be provided that doesn't violate the confidentiality.
Right? Yeah.
So, you know, it's fine to say, I can't tell you who's getting this payment, but we should also be able to ask, you know, so you can see some of these are clearly mortgage payments. So for this property, individual, I don't need to know the name, I don't need to know the property name or number, but what's the sum total, you know, of the assistance of the mortgage payments that have been made on that property?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's...
These are mortgage payments?
Those are all mortgage payments.
$2,000 mortgage.
Yeah, so if you... What one is that?
Yeah, so I think...
So you can see some of them.
Anyway, that's why I suggest we give her some questions. That she can.
Yeah, let me look at this and see if I can maybe add.
Yep. No, absolutely.
Anything that I'd like to add? I mean, I would like to see something. Asked her about better monthly reporting.
Number 13.
Number 4 says how our expenses track.
Yeah. Number 13.
Number 13. When was the last time the BOS was provided? Yeah.
But
I think this should be.
So there's questions, and then there's, I think, actions that come out of the conversation about what's going to change.
Well, here's one right here. Food for Thanksgiving, $700.
We don't know. Is it one person, 10 families?
One. Not one per family.
So it's 7.
But
because
I guess
some of them, however, were one person with multiple.
There's so many places you can go as a town official and load up your vehicle with food for a family and bring it to them. for Thanksgiving or the whole week. And we're not making use of the local resources that, you know, we have at our disposal. How many turkeys did that guy on March Road bring?
He brought a lot.
20 turkeys he dropped off here?
We almost couldn't get rid of them all. How would you like me to proceed with it?
John's working on.
Would you like me to put her on the agenda at least for the next meeting? Okay. And I'll let her know.
I'm gonna look at this and see if there's anything else that I can think of that needs to go on that, and I'll get it back to you.
Okay. Do you want me to email you what I emailed to the requester? Would you like to see that as well? Yep. Okay.
Yes, please. Okay. Anything more?
I did have one other thing now that I'm thinking about it.
Did we cover the Civic Plus?
The Civic Plus. We paid our bill, but they changed their name. So they need us to just acknowledge that we are still going with them, even though we've already paid. I was like, did I not pay you? They're like, no, we got your payment. They basically, the license and service agreement needs to be signed. Do you want to sign that, John?
Yeah. This is page. Yeah.
And then that was all for me.
There's one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I just put that in there because Carrie has completed the MS-1, okay. And it is here for you to sign. I didn't do it, so
yeah.
These are just all the summary of inventory evaluation.
We're back, Sue.
Thank you.
That wasn't even 2 hours. Now it's, I guess it's 2 hours for the first block and one for the second.
You have to keep putting your dime in.
We get 30 minutes this time.
We'll keep putting Nick in.
We're into the select board reports now, Sue.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. To me?
Okay.
Yes.
We had a planning board meeting, and for all you ice cream aficionados, we are going to have an ice cream. BB Scoops has put in a request for, you know, the old Daniels Wells building. They are going to be, they've been approved to put an ice cream and fast food restaurant in the old Daniels Wells building.
Cool.
So they will be going in, that was on the 17th that they got their approval, their site plan.
You don't need any of these? Okay, I didn't want to take something out.
So we've got...
are they going to open up?
I don't know. They just got their approval. Their site plan approval was on the 17th. So they probably have some changes to do inside and some...
About the property.
Yeah, some changes inside, outside. They'll have plenty of parking there. It's going to be mainly ice cream and things like maybe hot dogs, hamburgers. Nothing eat in. It's going to be takeout.
That's awesome.
So we'll have lobsters, ice cream, and hamburgers, and then you have Margaret's Kitchen.
And then we'll have a station right for Lipitor.
And the market.
Yeah.
The Inchquam Market is now going to be dealing in ice cream, selling ice cream. They're going to be opening that up. So even that's not from us, but the BB Scoops is going to be there. So we have coming up this month, we have the Solar Garden site plan review again if they don't ask for another continuance. And I think we're probably only about a year away from having to review their pilot agreement again, because we renewed that for, I think it was 3 years or 2 years. In about another year, that pilot agreement is going to be coming up again, and we still haven't even seen any inroads to getting a site plan review done. So that is all I have. It is now in question as to, from the Rec Commission, as to whether Trunk or Treat is going to go for Halloween. The recommendations are from state that it doesn't go because of the pandemic conditions are still on the rise. So, and that's all I've got.
CIP met on Monday, just an organizational meeting. Andy Sanborn is going to be the chair again. They laid out a schedule to get through all of the department and board reviews to have their recommendations in to us by the first week of December. So I think that lines up pretty well with our budget
schedule
plans. Trish, we need to get that update to the volunteer policy done, because that includes the part about one-year
I knew what you were talking about.
Appointments to the committee. They've worked out a schedule of who will be they're planning on it becoming a three-year appointment, and they worked out who would be the three, the two, the one this year to get the phasing started. So those will be coming forward. We should probably see those next meeting.
I've received one, and I think Kate meant to attach hers, but I didn't quite get it.
Oh, okay.
I sent those to you both.
the 91A, and then Jim, I sent you the MS one.
So that's CIP. And like I mentioned, I'll work with Nate and help him get the beginnings of a plan together for all his transfer stuff. I mentioned that to the committee, and they thought it was great, that it was, you know, exactly the kind of thing that ought to be in there. Budgets are due on Friday the 2nd. I suspect they'll come in kind of a wave, and just a reminder that we'll start our reviews on the 21st. So the 14th will be a regular meeting, and then the 21st will be a budget review day. So we'll be back to every week, but every 1 week will be a regular meeting, 1 week will be a budget. And we can adjust those to whatever time works best for everybody. And Trish, you don't need to really be there for those. But that'll get us through there. Building Construction Committee is pressing along. We've got a couple of we think we've kind of finalized the concept for any renovation to this building. Ran it by Trish and Julie, and I think it takes care of all the safety and quality of life issues we were trying to get to. We did get new bond rates yesterday from the New Hampshire Municipal Bond Bank. The 20-year bond rate was 1.67, which sets up now, you know, they'll have a new bond auction in July, so, you know, that'll change, but that could set up one of these potential options to be less than a 3% tax rate impact, which would really be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody's probably heard, but the final school budget tax rate impact was cut down to 70 cents instead of the $1.65 we started at. So that's also good news.
Yes.
Yeah, the SAU is like the only one, I think, that this SAU is the only one that returned money back.
Well, they dipped pretty heavily, I think, into their unassigned fund balance to offset some of those big numbers they were looking at. So the building committee will meet again tomorrow night. We've got a schedule laid out, so we get the plans from the architect, you know, middle of October, and then we've set up a series of meetings. We'll host them here, you know, do a presentation on the program or the projects, and then individual designs, and then looking at having a public hearing with the board probably the first week of December and see how that shakes out. So. That's it.
I set it up.
Oh. And then I forgot, I'm sorry, the CIP forms, we're going to get those updated.
Yeah, I'll update them tomorrow.
And get those out to the department head so they can get those turned back in the next couple of weeks.
Yep.
You're going to send that to Melody, right? The list that you...
Yeah, John's going to take another look and see if he wants to add anything, mm-hmm. and then we'll send that to her and ask her to be ready to come talk about them on the 14th.
Yes, sir.
That's it.
Correct.
Oh, and I will not be here next Wednesday to sign checks. Okay.
I'll be here.
Going to help my mom move into her new place. Actually, she's already moved in. I just got to go do all the heavy lifting.
Tom?
No, I'm pretty well set. I think that what's good is looks like we're heading in the direction of having a pretty healthy fund balance this year, which will be really good and really helpful. I think we all agree that Julie's really heard and Gloria really done a great job in that office. We, mm-hmm. and people need to really appreciate. They don't see the work that they do.
The late nights and
Yeah.
And she's normally they're open on Wednesday, but she's here late just about every night.
Yeah, she's here late every night.
So I think things are going pretty well.
Okay. In that case,
no. They are necessary.
We can move on to signatures.
Yeah, so here's the MS-1 for you guys to sign.
What happens if we don't want to sign it?
I don't know. I think all I need is a majority.
Sorry to tell you what, Jay, taking up your place.
No, I'll just move over.
A little heavy-handed there.
Problem when you have a name that dips below the line.
Yeah.
So it looks, I'll check it, but it looks like we're up about $3 million over last year. So last year we were 529, this year it's 533, so almost $4 million. Oh, no, I'm sorry, 532 when you take out the exemptions.
Great. And then I just have the minutes.
We don't have the
payroll.
Oh, that's fine.
Payroll?
Unless you don't want to get paid.
Hey, everybody seems happy when we come in to sign the payroll. We could skip everything else, but not that.
Right.
That's not payroll.
That might be our taxes.
Veteran an exemption? Oh. No, it is. Payroll. Quarterly tax.
I think this goes to the town.
To the clerk?
To the clerk or the clerk of the board.
Sign, print, paper.
What happens if we cross off a name on here? Does that mean you have to take the check back?
I don't know, but I check under your car before you get into it then.
Yes. Look at all the tires.
Yeah. I'm sure they teach you the same thing in the Air Force, right? Don't mess with the people who pay you, feed you, or give you your shots.
That's right. We are signing a check for $5,000 for Cross Country Appraisal Group.
I just threw chocolate and drew it, scared the life out of our.
When the panic alarm goes off, we're going to say it was your fault.
Yep.
We are signing a check for $23,607.40 for Health Trust. We are signing a check for $10,252.87 for Pike Industries. Give you too many?
You did.
They're kind of sticking together with the paper clip. So. We are signing a check for $32,400.24 to the New Hampshire Retirement System. That's the one I tried to skip over.
The retirement system.
Yeah. Retirement system. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay, next on the agenda is the meeting minute approval. I would make a motion that we approve the Samberton Board of Selectmen minutes for September 16th, 2020, with any corrections.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. Any discussion of the motion? Hearing none. I will call for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstaining? Ayes have it. Motion carries unanimously. And Sue, I have to compliment you. I have never seen such a comprehensive set of minutes as what you are producing now.
Thank you. I'm not sure if that's good or bad, but thank you.
It's good. It's good because it used to be at one time that it all fit on one page.
My goodness. Well, I could make that happen too if you'd like.
No, that's okay because we used to get all sorts of questions.
I could abbreviate everything.
No. I gave you a compliment. Now you want me to take it back?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you, Sue. Doing a great job.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next board meeting is October 14th, 2020 at 5 p.m., and this will be a regular meeting.
Yes.
And Tom and I will be in next Wednesday to sign payroll checks. Sure. Jim will be absent, helping his mom, like a good son should.
Yeah.
Okay.
He had it was a cancer, but he's had it for 30 years, so I like going up with him.
I understand that.
Yeah, you're still running, so that's good. Keep it up. All right, your turn.
This is Tom.
Oh, Laurel Minority.
Oh. Loyal.
The big mouth at the end of the table was loud today. I move we adjourn.
I will second.
Non-debatable motion. All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Abstaining? Ayes have it. We are in adjournment at 8:24.
That was off.
Broken coffee. Right, twice a day, right?
All right. Night, Sue.
Night, Sue.
Good night, Sue.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.